Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Three primaries to go for the Democrats. Do the math, Hillary Clinton.
Though most senior Democrats say she hardly has a chance, Clinton is not giving up. She's favored in Puerto Rico's primary on Sunday, but Barack Obama seems to be ahead in the final two primaries, both on Tuesday in South Dakota and Montana. And then?
After the final primaries, people are going to start making up their minds. I think that's the natural progression that one would expect.
And Clinton told reporters she hopes superdelegates will ask who'd be the better candidate and better president. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
I'm Peter King. There's only one thing you can say with any certainty.
Expect the unexpected this election cycle, because that's all we've seen.
And University of South Florida politics professor Susan McManus says that goes for the Democrats meeting to decide on whether or not to seat the delegates they disqualified because of the early primary. McManus thinks it'll happen because of Florida's swing state status.
And you can't afford a swing state to have the moniker out there that they're only counting half that state's votes, and that's exactly what kind of publicity or ads will be run against Florida Democrats.
Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
Well, they might all be on the same page in Texas now. Tentative ruling there puts children back in the arms of their polygamist parents, back in their polygamist homes, with some provisos.
The parents will be required to go to parenting class. The DNA will continue.
Guy Choate, court appointee coordinating the hundreds of lawyers representing more than 400 children removed from their homes in April. The reuniting begins Monday. United States and Libya reaching a deal to try to resolve claims from the 1988 Lockerbie bombing and other incidents Washington views as Libyan acts of terrorism. Speaking on condition they not be named, sources say the idea is for the U.S. and Libya to open negotiations to discuss how to resolve all the outstanding claims, which have been an impediment to closer ties between the two countries. Death in Manhattan today, two killed in New York City's second fatal crane collapse accident in the past 3 months. Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
What has happened is unacceptable and intolerable. Having said that, we do not at the moment know exactly what happened or why.
Price of gas creeping up another penny, less than 4 cents to go to a $4 a gallon national average, and it is costing us some lifestyle change. Jeff Sundstrom at AAA.
Consumers are certainly reacting in terms of limiting the amount of discretionary driving they're doing, cutting back on some of their vacationing plans, and we think that trend is just going to continue throughout the summer months.
For a real change, how about a new national speed limit? Truckers Group wants it lower.
It'll reduce our fuel consumption, our emissions. It'll make the roads safer.
Association President John Hausladen says the roads would be safer because of speed consistency.
It needs to be the same for both cars and trucks. Data shows when you have speed differentials, crashes increase.
Hausladen hopes the idea will initiate serious discussion. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News.
The Dow drops 8 points today. This is CBS News.
At Mercedes-Benz, every certified pre-owned vehicle comes with roadside assistance and warranty coverage for up to 5 years or 100,000 miles, ensuring that every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Visit your local authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer for details.
See dealer for complete details on warranty coverage and roadside assistance. Certified pre-owned limited warranty provides coverage for 1 year up to 100,000 total vehicle miles from the expiration date of the original 4-year 50,000 mile Mercedes-Benz new vehicle limited warranty or from the time of pre-owned purchase if the original limited warranty has expired.
Are we into the Olympics? Are you kidding? This is America. We high-five after meetings. We cheer when delayed planes land. So you better believe we're going to go nuts for our Olympic athletes. At americascheer.com, hosted by Bank of America, you can send videos, photos, and texts directly to our Olympic team. Let them know you're out there. americascheer.com. If you cheer, they'll hear. This is America. Don't you belong at Bank of America? Bank of Opportunity.
Member FDIC.
Let those people go. United States pressing Israel today to let seven Gaza Strip Palestinians travel to the U.S. to study on coveted U.S. government Fulbright fellowships. It's State Department spokesman Tom Casey here.
We are working to resolve it and certainly believe that we can come to a positive outcome on this with the Israelis.
Israel says it's working on the issue. High-level diplomacy meets high-level partying.
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is a trained pianist, so once she leaves her current gig, maybe she can get a job with these guys. Of course, it might help if she could breathe fire like Kiss bassist Gene Simmons. Rice ran into the band the other day when they were all staying in the same hotel in Sweden. She was there for an international conference on Iraq. Kiss wasn't. Rice says it was a thrill to meet the band. Too bad there wasn't a jam session. Can you imagine? Sam Litzinger, CBS News.
I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
There's the jackrabbit, the whale song, and the symphony. There's an art to honking. Unfortunately, it doesn't actually reduce traffic. But CSX trains can help. By moving millions of tons of freight on our rails, we're relieving congestion on the highways every day. And that means you'll hear a little less of this. Go to CSX.com to learn more. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Peter B., ready to roll. Rolling on down that highway with you. And I'd love to buy you a tank of gas, but I can't afford it. Back, can you spot me 20 for a fill up over here, huh? 20 wouldn't fill it up, you're right. We have a rich array of guests and some provocative topics to discuss with you over the next 3 hours. Robert Perry will join us here in just a moment from ConsortiumNews.com. We're going to talk about the Beltway buzz, about Scott McClellan's book, and also the Rules Committee meeting this weekend in Washington that may or may not determine the Democratic nominee. We'll talk a little bit about that, and the end of the Bush-Clinton era with a question mark. Later this hour, we're going to tell you about a powerful new documentary. It's called Indestructible, and it was made by a brother-sister team. Ben Beyer was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and he's an actor and a guy with stage experience, so he decided to star in his own film, as ALS has taken its toll on him. And his sister, Rebecca Rush, will be here to talk with us in about half an hour. Jacques Leslie, who writes for Mother Jones and is a dam expert. I said that on purpose. D-A-M. He wrote a book called Deep Water, The Epic Struggle Over Dams, Displaced People, and the Environment. And he has also covered China. He wrote a cover story for Mother Jones about the pollution problems in China as we move forward toward this summer, summer's Olympic Games in Beijing. And Jacques Leslie will comment on the devastation in Sichuan Province, where they continue to battle new dams that have been created by the 7.9 earthquake that hit 2 weeks ago. Well, maybe it's almost three now. And so Jacques will be with us about an hour away. We're also going to talk about that pesky subpoena that has been issued to Karl Rove, and the two prior ones for Harriet Myers and Joshua Bolton. Emily Berman from the New York University Brennan Center for the Law will join us. And then we talk election protection issues. We're going to get Brad Friedman's take on Recount, the HBO film that started playing that last weekend. And also, amusingly, the Fox News Channel has a new email address where you can turn in people for voter fraud. And we're going to encourage you to focus on one suspect. Her name's Ann Coulter. That's coming up in our third hour, straight ahead here. You can call in anytime, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And email works, too. 24/7. You can drop me a note, peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Parry joins us now. That's P-A-R-R-Y. A well-known journalist in Washington, wrote for the AP and Newsweek, and also worked on Frontline. His most recent book is called Neck Deep, and you can get information and order a copy at neckdeepbook.com. He co-authored it with two of his sons, and he writes prolifically at consortiumnews.com. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Peter.
How you doing today?
All right.
You spinning around with Scott McClellan? Have you gotten your exclusive interview yet? I mean, he's been everywhere.
Yeah, it is a bit funny when people are citing the first exclusive interview on cable or the first exclusive interview in prime time. It's sort of odd. It's he's been around.
Yep, he's a former liar. He's a recovering dissembler, and now we believe everything he says. And of course, a lot of what he says is corroborated by other people. And with the insider role that he played, it is fascinating to hear what he's talking about. But there are credibility issues with this particular witness, wouldn't you say?
Well, sure. It sort of reminds me of the old days back during Watergate when there was the old slogan, "Don't buy books from crooks," because many of the people who'd been involved in committing crimes during Watergate then went off and wrote books about themselves and sold them. But yeah, certainly with McClellan, you have to sort of look at what he had done when he was in the White House. He was a pretty aggressive press secretary. He was obviously, that was his job. But he told things that weren't true, and he's now acknowledging that. So I think he deserves some credit for coming forward and beginning to tell the truth. But certainly one can't forget that he was also out there banging away at those of us who were trying to question Bush's policies back during that period of 2002, 2003, and 2004.
And in your article, Surprise, Surprise, Bush Lied, you recount some of those efforts by many people to challenge the messages, the propaganda of the Bush administration. And there were various tactics used. They would call bosses. Tim Russert got phone calls because the White House didn't like what Chris Matthews was doing. Brian Williams said that he got calls on his cell phone while he was reporting from Kuwait just before we invaded Iraq, when things he said didn't sit well at the Pentagon. And we have Katie Couric, who surprised me a little bit by acknowledging that when she was at the Today Show at NBC, that she felt the corporate message was clear not to push too hard critically on the Bush administration. And Jessica Yellen, formerly of ABC, now at CNN, had similar comments. And, Bob, what I want you to comment on is the way people like David Gregory and Charlie Gibson and others have basically said, oh, we asked all the questions, they just didn't answer them.
Well, it's not been easy trying to get truth out of this administration, certainly, but that's not that different from, say, what was happening under Ronald Reagan when many of these approaches were being set up. That if one of the real geniuses of the Reagan administration, if you want to put it that way, was their ability to go after reporters who were not towing the line. And many of the people who were working on that back in the 1980s, some of them we now call the neoconservatives, have since moved on to this administration using the same policies, using the same strategies to discredit journalists, question their patriotism, go after them on professional grounds, try to get people to mount campaigns with their bosses, with their superiors in the news organizations, to get them fired, get them removed, get them punished. And frankly, over time, that approach, carried on aggressively as it has been, works. And what you saw in 2002 and 2003, whatever these folks now want to say in terms of how tough they were in terms of dealing with the lies coming out of the Bush administration, the truth is, the reality is, that they had been, by that point, thoroughly housebroken, thoroughly intimidated. And they ought to just acknowledge that they failed the American people and try to do better from here on in. But these are the approaches that we started seeing in the 1980s, and they've just become more and more aggressive and effective.
And to see the response to the allegation leveled by McClellan that the U.S. media are complicit enablers in the White House's, quote, carefully orchestrated campaign to shape and manipulate sources of public approval for invading Iraq, It fascinates me, Bob, that we still have just total stone silence from the corporate media about what is now almost a month old, the New York Times expose on the way generals were inserted into American television media with direct approval by Donald Rumsfeld. And these guys can't bring themselves to acknowledge that. They can't acknowledge what Phil Donahue has told us, that when he had a show before he got fired up from MSNBC, that if he had Michael Moore on, he had to have two conservatives on for balance. And, you know, these things are not being aired out while there is this kind of very carefully orchestrated revulsion at these charges from Scott McClellan.
Right, and what you've got here is a press corps in denial, and McClellan's right when he uses that phrase about complicit enablers. That's a pretty good concept, I think, for what happened here. But you do have the Washington press corps now not wanting to go back and face up to this, and it is sort of odd when you have relatively minor mistakes, like say at the New York Times when they didn't detect lies from Jason Blair when he was covering the Washington sniper case. The executive editor and the managing editor were out the door. When you had a relatively, I think, kind of minor mistake by 60 Minutes when they didn't fully check out some memo about Bush's undeniable failure to live up to his National Guard duty, four producers were fired. And they were certainly right in the big picture and may have been right on the memo.
Yeah.
But they were still fired. But here you have a major catastrophe, the United States going to war illegally, invading another country, 4,000-plus American troops are dead, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead, maybe trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money wasted, and nobody gets fired. I guess you might say Judy Miller lost her job at the New York Times because she went really quite far.
Right.
But still, there's been nothing comparable to the kind of purge of incompetent and complicit journalists and news executives that you would expect if the same standards were applied as they applied them to Jason Blair. And I think that's the extraordinary thing here. There's a rewards and punishment system in Washington journalism where there are no punishments for screwing up like this. In fact, there are lots of rewards for playing along with the Bush administration. But you don't have, so there are no punishments, the rewards are skewed. And that kind of rewards and punishment system ends up getting you the kind of Washington press corps we have today.
And you make a great point in the piece, Bob, about how the misinformation and disinformation of the White House is still being repeated as truth. You cite Scott Pelley in a 60 Minutes episode in 2008, repeating the canard that Saddam Hussein brought this on himself because he wouldn't admit that he didn't have WMD. And that, of course, is the double bluff that we have talked about before. William joins us from Santa Cruz. Hi, William. Your comment?
Hi, Peter. Yeah, thanks for this discussion. This is just really great, and you guys are just nailing it point for point as you go along in the discussion here. It's really wonderful. But I remember hearing Daniel Ellsberg being interviewed by Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! A couple of years ago, and he was talking because he revealed the Pentagon Papers back in the day at a crucial point in history that was very helpful to the nation overall. And I think, and he was talking with Amy about how people will start coming forward, or hopefully he wanted to encourage people to start coming forward that were inside the Pentagon, inside the administration, that would be able to reveal things about how the Bushies were working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's precisely what we're seeing with Scott McClellan. This is somebody who was there on the inside, and he was really kind of freaked out and disgusted at the time, but maybe a little too weak of character to really do anything about it at the time. And the Bush administration, they are very intimidating, and Dick Cheney's a pretty scary guy, you know. So,
all right, William, thank you. You make a good point there, and Daniel Ellsberg did write an open letter a couple of years ago calling on current members of the administration to go public to stop an attack on Iran. People could still respond to that call. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
If you like people who talk funny, listen to Stephanie Miller in the morning on AM 540 KRXA. Ah!
Our schools are in trouble. Healthcare is a mess. The economy is broken. I get it. But we can get California back on track. I'm Barbara Sprenger, and I'm running for state assembly because we can't send more politicians to Sacramento. I'm a leader in a group fighting foreign corporate control of our water, and we're winning. I was twice elected to our local school board, balancing budgets in tough times and seeing that kids didn't fall through the cracks. I started a green technology business, creating jobs with full health care benefits. And I was trained in making good public policy by Leon Panetta at the Panetta Institute. We can do a better job in California. We can grow our economy by investing in college education and green technology. But we need leaders who get it and who can get the job done. I'm Barbara Sprenger, and I'm ready to get the job done for all of us. I would be honored to have your vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd. This message was paid for by my campaign, Sprenger 2008.
In the Monterey County courts, there are 8 criminal cases for every 1 civil case. That means we need a judge who's an expert in criminal trials. Mark Hood is the only candidate who has 19 years' experience as a criminal prosecutor. He has an unmatched record for integrity, fairness, and knowledge. Mark Hood is endorsed by law enforcement, including the Monterey County Deputy Sheriff's Association. On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge.
I'm Mark Hood, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Mark Hood judge.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hey, this is Larry from Acme Coffee, and if, like me, you own a business and are tired of waiting through aggressive sales reps pushing you to advertise on mediocre network TV stations or stale radio broadcasters, contact KRXA 540 sales manager Larry Rathall at 394-5792. AM 540's committed listener base will help you grow your business. I know, because they're helping me grow mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Robert Perry, journalist from ConsortiumNews.com. Visit the website for a lot of great coverage. And if you can help out, they're a nonprofit and they could use your contribution. That's ConsortiumNews.com. And Brad from Santa Cruz joins us with a comment. Brad, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Good to have you listening on KRXA 540. Hey, Brad.
Hey.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
You know, I got a question for you guys. It's kind of a two-parter. I wonder if the Democrats, if you guys suppose that when a Democrat is elected president, will the press suddenly get a backbone? And will Katie Couric's corporate masters who told her, who had an atmosphere that said lay off, now promote an atmosphere that says drill down. What do you think?
No, that's a very interesting question. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think the news media will act much like it did in that frame between 92 and 93. There was that the belief that in 92 that the press had gone pretty easy on George H.W. Bush, and before that on Ronald Reagan, and then they suddenly got very tough when Bill Clinton came in, and they went into all the Whitewater, Travelgate kinds of minor scandals and treated them as major scandals after basically ignoring many of the major scandals of the Reagan-Bush years. Iran-Contra got very it was almost ignored for many years before it blew up, and then it was put to bed. Contra drugs, Iraqgate, all these major scandals of the Reagan-Bush years were treated differently. And then you get when you go into this Bush administration, the thinking was, well, now the press will apply those same real hard, tough standards to George W. Bush.
Yeah.
And they flip back, and they flip back to being the same accommodating press they'd been under Reagan and Bush in the beginning. So I think there has been a tendency to go for the press to be scared of dealing with Republicans, because the Republicans are much tougher. They come after you. They have attack groups that go after you. And then when the Democrats come in, there's a sense of, we're going to prove we're not liberal. The press has been called the liberal media for so many years. And I knew people, when Clinton came in 93, some journalists were saying, now we're going to prove we're not liberal. We're going to prove we can be tougher on the Democrats than any Republican. So there was not this sort of even neutral standard of we'll be tough on everybody or not. There was a case of it going back and forth. There was fear of the Republicans and the conservatives. There was no fear of the Democrats, and in many cases, the feeling was, we've got to prove now we can be really tough. And then when the Republicans came back in, it flipped back to being this passive, we don't want to be seen as being unpatriotic, we don't want to be seen as being too challenging.
Yeah. Brad, very good question. Thanks for bringing that up today. I appreciate it. Robert Perry, the other column up this week at Consortium News is called End of the Bush-Clinton Era, and you tag on to Hillary's comment about RFK's assassination date and just the way the campaign has kind of wound down to this point. You passed on using the term last throws in your headline, but I think you did a great job of recapping the progress and process of this campaign. And I want to warn people that there appears to be another preacher feature aimed at sliming Obama. I got emails today about a sermon given by a Catholic priest at Trinity Church recently. His name is Reverend Michael Flager, P-F-L-E-G-E-R. And he made some comments that are likely to be picked up by Sean Hannity, so be prepared for that. But Bob, I wanted to ask you what you expect out of Saturday's Rules Committee meeting of the Democratic National Committee. Hillary's team is bussing in loads of people trying to turn this into a big event. How do you think this is going to turn out?
Well, it is pretty extraordinary that the Clinton campaign is choosing to almost replicate, let's say, the Bush campaign of 2000.
Yeah, we just saw a recount.
Right, from going through the kind of using the very negative politics, the style, the personal destruction approach that the right used against Al Gore in 2000, and then even going into the recount period, where you get, where in the case of the Bushes, they sent in these rioters. They sent in the so-called the Brooks Brothers riot.
Mm-hmm.
It was set up outside the Miami-Dade vote count, and these people were sent in to essentially harass the vote counters. It does appear that this is a very strange development where the Clinton campaign seems to want to follow that lead.
Yeah. Bob, thank you very much. Robert Perry at ConsortiumNews.com. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you.
Coming up next, a film about Lou Gehrig's disease.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Emerson. Whatever the demand, whatever the challenge. With Emerson, you can consider it solved. I'm Charles Osgood. Bethel, New York is not a wealthy area. Quite the opposite, says Alan Gary.
Our county is the second most depressed county in New York State.
But he's wealthy, and thanks to him, a fantastic state-of-the-art museum is opening there Monday, celebrating a seminal event that happened there in the summer of 1969 on Max Yasgur's farm, what the world came to know as Woodstock.
All up the country, 5 minutes you walk.
where once the thousands gathered to hear Hendrix and Joplin, Canned Heat, and the rest. We'll tell you about this new museum after this for Emerson. With millions of new homes being built in China, finding an energy-responsible way of heating and cooling them becomes critical. That's why businesses turn to Emerson. Emerson accurately predicts what world trends will mean for them, so Emerson can create the technologies that allow homeowners to cut energy usage and their electric bills. Emerson anticipates customer needs so that when they're ready, Emerson's ready. Emerson, consider it solved.
Now you can lower cholesterol by taking a Centrum multivitamin. Introducing Centrum Cardio, the first and only leading complete multivitamin that can lower cholesterol. Centrum Cardio contains Corowise, a natural ingredient that can lower cholesterol. You may see results in as little as 4 weeks. The lower cholesterol you want from the name you trust. Centrum Cardio. Good for your cholesterol, good for the rest of you. 400 milligrams free phytosterol taken twice a day for a total daily intake of at least 800 milligrams as part of a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol may reduce the risk of heart disease.
Duke Dillon came to Woodstock from Texas that summer and stayed, and he's now one of the site interpreters at the new museum.
We all came from our little villages, our towns, our hamlets, our big cities, or wherever. We were all brought here for one reason, you know, maybe to practice what we were preaching.
The museum's curator is Wade Lawrence.
The concept started off to commemorate the Woodstock Festival, because that's where we're located. But it soon became obvious that this was about more than just a rock festival. It was about the entire decade that created it.
He expects that many will come back to the area to relive what happened in state-of-the-art digital productions.
In 9 minutes, you experience the full 3 days of the festival right. From the audience perspective. The only thing that's missing is the mud.
Alan Gary is a local boy who started out as a TV repairman, sold his cable TV empire to Time Warner for $2.5 billion. Our Anthony Mason asked him about the new museum at Bethel Woods.
You've made a huge personal investment in this. Tens of millions of dollars?
A little bit more than that.
Hundreds of millions.
It approaches $100 million.
And all of that because you just wanted to see this county come back.
Absolutely right. I think that without getting corny, I owe it. I owe it to these people.
Bethel still has Filipinis Pond. Duke Devlin sure remembers that.
We were muddy and dirty. It was like a bathtub. You know? Yeah. And there was a laundromat. You washed your clothes there. You did a couple backflips. We did our hippy-dippy thing, man.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
This portion of the Peter B. Collins Show is dedicated to my friend Al Hart, who lost his wife to ALS about 4 years ago. And to my friend David Ames, who continues to fight 5 years after the onset of Lou Gehrig's disease. There's a new film that debuts tonight at the Roxy Film Center in San Francisco. It's called Indestructible, and it's a documentary, a first-person account by Ben Beyer, of his own struggle with ALS, also known, of course, as Lou Gehrig's disease. This is a powerful film that I watched the other night, and the producer and sister of the subject of the film, Ben Beyer, is Rebecca Rush, and she joins us to talk about Indestructible. Rebecca, thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I mentioned my own contact with ALS. I don't use the word victims, but people who have been diagnosed with it and struggle with it and confront it. And I imagine that I'm not alone, that most people have been touched in some way by this condition. It is a neurodegenerative disorder that ultimately is fatal. But I have been touched by the lives of people contacted by it and by the really courageous struggles that people put up against it. Introduce our listeners to your brother, Ben.
Sure. You know, it's interesting that you say that because as I have been working on this film and become so immersed in the ALS community, what I'm finding is that it does feel like an epidemic almost. More and more people seem to be getting afflicted with the disease, and the rate of incidence is definitely increasing.
Yeah.
And when Ben was diagnosed a little over 5 years ago, he was given no answers and no hope. The doctors basically told him, as they do many, many other patients, you have 2 to 5 years to live. Go home and prepare yourself to die. And in our medical world, that's just not acceptable. There are many treatments for many different ailments, and to have something that affects this many people and have absolutely no answers is just, that's just not okay.
Yeah.
So Ben really started the film as a way to find some answers for himself, as a way to document his journey. He was a writer and an actor before he was diagnosed, and film was a very natural progression for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he traveled all over the world filming doctors and patients and family members. I can't really say that he got the answers he was looking for, but the film has really started to ask many of those questions that many people have about their own lives, and really has opened people up to some of the bigger challenges in life that we can all be faced with.
Yeah. And it is something that we need to reckon with and pay attention to, because there are many diseases that are certainly worthy of research and development and all kinds of investments. But I think one of the things your film helps show us is that ALS is not limited to older people. I think initially many people anecdotally get the idea that this is an elder issue. But your brother was 31. My friend David Ames was 41, a very active, vibrant man, a lawyer who was working with environmental groups. And he was surfing in the Pacific Ocean when he noticed some changes in his musculature, and that he couldn't do some of the same moves that he had done just the last time he had been out on his board. And so I think it's very important for people to understand that. And one of the things I think your film helps to do is it reduces the stigma that I think many family members feel when someone close to them receives this diagnosis and begins to deteriorate before their eyes.
Well, and there are many misconceptions about the disease. You're right, it does not affect just elderly people. It affects men and women almost equally. More and more younger people are getting the disease. I know many people in their early 20s who are getting diagnosed with the disease. There's even a form of it that affects children. There is a definite misconception about this disease and about many diseases like it, that there aren't enough people affected at any given time, and that's just not true. And one of the scary things about ALS in particular is that most doctors really do believe that there is a genetic predisposition but an environmental trigger. So it could literally be something in the water. And if that's the case, we should be afraid, and we should really start to, people need to be aware, and they need to motivate themselves to do something and find answers, because what we're going to find is that this disease does become an epidemic.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, who I mentioned, his father, John Ames, is a hero of mine, because instead of ever spending a moment feeling sorry for himself or feeling sorry for his son, he has plunged into twin objectives. One is to be the best damn caregiver he can for David. And the other is that he has put everything, all of his energies, into supporting stem cell research here in California. Of course, we moved ahead over the objections of the Bush administration. And also, you know, there are other attempts to approach the disease, to develop pharmaceutical, not remedies, but things that can slow down the progression of the illness. And my hope is that the combination of genomics, the study of DNA, and the use of stem cell research, initially, I think, to try to identify causes and ultimately to try to help create either pharmaceutical approaches that are tailored to the individual's DNA, or to find ways to replace the unhealthy stems, the unhealthy cells with these stem cells that can then replicate and regenerate in a healthy way. Those offer some promise, but they're certainly way down the road. And my friend John is doing this for the next generation of ALS patients, and I hope it is a legacy that pays off. What are some of the other scientific developments or approaches that you think offer some promise, Rebecca Rush?
Honestly, I have a hard time answering that question because so far there have just been a few things that have quite possibly shown some improvement for Ben, but it's really almost impossible to say if they actually are. And what my goal really is through the movie to educate the public and really create the awareness about the disease so more people know about it. Something I frequently say to people is that Michael J. Fox and the Pope and Muhammad Ali have done so much for Parkinson's research because they have faces to identify with. They know these people. And if Ben can become that face of ALS, then that's great because people will start to really make an effort and create more awareness. Until the public gets afraid and realizes that it's a big problem, things move way too slowly. Mm-hmm. And for John's research, I'm sure he needs an immense amount more funding to really properly do the research that he wants to do and really properly make an impact. And ALS specifically is sorely underfunded in many, many ways.
Indeed it is. We're talking with Rebecca Rush. The new film is called Indestructible. It opens at the Roxy Cinema, the Roxy Film Center in San Francisco. And do you know what the length of the run is so far, Rebecca?
It's going to be running until Thursday. Unless we get a great turnout this week, then they may extend it for us. So,
okay.
But definitely come out this weekend. I will be there to do Q&As tonight after the 7 p.m. show, tomorrow after the 2 and 7 p.m. shows,
mm-hmm.
and also on Sunday at 4:30.
And there's a website at indestructiblefilm.com, indestructiblefilm.com, if you want to get more information. Now, tell us a little bit about one of the segments of the film chronicles Ben's efforts to get a hold of an herbal treatment called Bunaogao, B-U-N-A-O-G-A-O. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, he was on Bunaogao for the first several years, and he still does take it. It definitely showed some slowing of the progression of the disease. It's a difficult thing to actually measure, but he really did feel that it helped slow the progression. And because he's now in year six of the disease, it is very likely that it did have some positive impact.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult to measure the effect that many of these treatments have on people because there's very little support for alternative treatments. Blind clinical trials are something that a lot of ALS patients don't want to do because they're told they have 2 years left to go. Why would they spend it in a blind clinical trial and possibly getting a placebo?
Yeah.
So, but Bunaogao definitely showed to be effective for a lot of people. If they start on it early enough, it can help slow the progression. And the scientist whose father actually invented it has recently done a full report on the findings that they've come to.
And what is Ben's current condition, Rebecca? Give us a profile, please.
My stock response is he's hanging in there. He's a very strong-willed person. He's a fighter. He is confined to a wheelchair, and his speech is has gotten almost unintelligible. It's very difficult for him to talk, and he needs 24-hour care. But he's also very happy to see his film finally finished. He has been working very hard. He works harder than most healthy people I know. And he's in good spirits, and he really does fight, and he wants to, see how he could outlive us all, really. but, you know, I think he also has made some peace with, you know, what his reality is. And the film has really helped him do that by feeling that he is leaving behind a very big, important legacy. This film has changed people's lives and people who have been affected by ALS and people who have not. In fact, after our Los Angeles screening just last week, I got a phone call from somebody who had never had anything to do with ALS, and he called me to tell me how much the film made him question his mortality and really take a look at the choices he makes in his life and how it really did change his life.
Yeah.
And if we can do that for a few people, then I'd say we've been successful.
Rebecca, I have to say the film's very powerful. It's very personal, and it's a kind of combination of a diary and, you know, Ben's efforts to fight this disease and to find resources and support for that. But throughout it all, the thing that I will never forget is his smile.
Yeah.
It is so contagious, and even, you know, in some cases now, because of his condition, it might strike some people at times that he's smiling inappropriately, but he seems like the kind of person who, before ALS, was just irrepressible, a prankster, and somebody who, you know, would seek out the wallflower in a group and make him or her laugh. Is that a good perception?
I think so, yeah. And I think that that's why Ben is such a great person to tell his story, because he's very likable, and he's somebody that anyone can relate to. He's anybody's brother, son, father, friend. And that's why people, I think, really respond well to him. And I think that's what has also helped keep him alive as long as he has, is that, you know, in the 3.5 years that he and I lived together while I was helping to take care of him, we laughed every day. And that is an important piece of life to remember, is that you never know when something's going to change. You never know when you're going to be faced with some kind of challenge. And if you can't laugh on a daily basis, you know, you're wasting some time.
Rebecca Rush is with us. We're going to take a break and continue in a moment. If you'd like to talk with her, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Indestructible is this documentary made by Ben Beyer and produced by our guest, Rebecca Rush. You can get information at indestructiblefilm.com, and you're welcome to call 888-5-PETER-B. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Commentary and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life.
Join ThinkerToys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why ThinkerToys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. ThinkerToys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
For me, it started in the fields. It started seeing people sick and dying from pesticide poisoning. I'm Bill Monning. I'm a candidate for Assembly today because working together, I know we can make a difference. I brought growers, workers, and neighbors together to take on the chemical companies. That fight took me to Sacramento, where I helped pass bills that have protected workers, rural residents, and our environment. I'm Bill Monning. Working with people to improve our lives and build our community is what is most important to me. For the past 35 years, I've raised a family here, taught at the Monterey Institute and the Monterey College of Law, and worked to build mediation alternatives to legal disputes. My latest project is bringing conflict resolution into our schools to keep kids from resorting to violence. Now I want to take those mediation skills to get things done in Sacramento. Join our campaign. To volunteer for Monning for Assembly, call 655-1792 or check our website, billmonning.org. Paid for by Bill Monning for Assembly.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggie Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
What you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up.
We're talking with Rebecca Rush. Together with her brother, she produced this film that he is the subject of, called Indestructible, about his battle with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And it opens at the Roxy Cinema in San Francisco this weekend. I encourage you to go out and support it, because you know how it works at the box office. The more people attend, the longer it will be shown. And Rebecca, once it completes its theatrical distribution, will there be a DVD release? Because I know a lot of people who can't get to theaters who would benefit from this film.
Yes, absolutely. The DVD release is planned for early fall.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we're raising the funds to pay for that distribution. So, again, we can't stress enough how important it is to come out to the theater and support the film and tell other people that you know to see the film. And there are also ways for people to help contribute to the distribution of the film by visiting our website. You can read about a current campaign that we're doing. Basically, all of our supporters are participating in our distribution.
Mm-hmm. And again, that is indestructiblefilm.com. And spell indestructible correctly, please. E-N-D-E-S-T-R-U-C-T-I-B-L-E. Rebecca, in the film, there are a couple of scenes where you honestly show the strain on family members. Your mom and dad are arguing with Ben at one point. And I'm glad you left that in, because I think that the impact on family members and other caregivers is something that really needs to be, told along with the narrative about the patient himself. Talk a little bit about the stresses and strains that you've had to deal with as a family.
Well, there's a definite learning process that happens when somebody is confronting something like this, a tragedy like this, because there's so many emotions that they're going through, and then there's the rest of the family that's not going through it themselves, but they don't know how to communicate. And that process just completely breaks down. And the reason why we leave that scene in the film is because it's a very common experience. And truly, I didn't know how common it was until after we had started screening the film. And so many people would say to us, thank you for leaving that in, because it really made them feel that their family, who experienced a very similar situation, had a sense of normalcy. And it truly helped me and my family knowing that we had some normalcy as well. It's a very common thing for families to just break down and not know how to communicate with each other and how to really say what they're feeling without offending the other person or the person who's going through it. And many times people just don't even know how they feel.
Mm-hmm. And Rebecca, without prying deeply into your family's finances, it has to have a huge economic impact. Tell us if Ben had insurance and, how much that may or may not have covered.
It's a huge economic strain, even when you do have insurance. And luckily, my parents have been very helpful with Ben's financial needs. As you can imagine, he was unable to work, and luckily his wife still carried the insurance, and Medicare does have a new clause for ALS patients, so they can be covered under Medicare, and many things do get covered, but many things don't. He needs 24-hour care, and that is completely out of pocket. There's mm-hmm. no insurance that will cover that, and luckily, my parents have somehow managed to be able to do it, but it puts a huge financial strain on them, on Ben. The movie, luckily, we've had hundreds and hundreds of supporters that have paid for the movie, but there's, the reality is it's not pretty.
Mm-hmm. Now, I do recall one scene with, I suppose it's Ben's ex-wife, the mother of his son, John. And I don't know the story there, and I don't recall the film actually telling it, but I know that this has a tremendous impact on couples, and I know of one case where 2 years into the diagnosis, the wife said, I'm sorry, I can't do this, and she left. If you care to, tell us what happened with Ben and his wife.
Well, the reality is marriage is split up. It happens when there isn't an ALS diagnosis, and Ben's marriage just didn't work out for a variety of reasons, and I wouldn't be able to even begin to tell you if it would have worked out had he not been diagnosed, but I know that it is very common. Divorce is common in general, but also it's very common when something like this happens that one spouse just can't handle it, and Ben and Joey's marriage just didn't work out. Josephine is his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And their marriage just didn't work out for a variety of reasons, just like any marriage doesn't work out, many marriages don't work out, sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. And I just want to take a moment here to share a story that I think will hit home with a lot of people. Richard Olney is a medical doctor who is a renowned specialist on ALS, and he ran the ALS Treatment and Research Center at the University of California, San Francisco, until a couple of years ago when he was diagnosed with ALS himself. And there's been some television coverage of it on local news programs here in the Bay Area. It's very touching, it just seems so incredibly unfair. And that's what I came away with from his story and also from Ben Byers' story that you tell in the film, Rebecca. How do you deal with that on a daily basis, that this seems so cruel and just so downright unfair?
Well, the reality is it has changed my life in so many drastic ways that the choices I make are very deliberate. I live my life every day knowing that I too could be faced with something like this. And that helps me to really put a lot of intention behind my decisions and live my life knowing that tomorrow could be my last. I hope not, but if it is, I've made good choices, I've developed good relationships, and I am proud of what I've accomplished so far. It's a little morbid for a lot of people, but it is really, truly how I managed to mm-hmm. accept this is, this is just a part of our mortality.
Rebecca Rush, thank you very much. The film is Indestructible at the Roxy in San Francisco this weekend. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
An agreement with the Texas polygamists.
The children will be returned to the parents or guardian or custodian beginning on Monday.
If Scott McClellan testifies, would President Bush intervene?
I think so. The law would allow for that. But I'm not suggesting that that's what would happen or not.
So this is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. An agreement today between the courts, Texas Child Protective Services, and lawyers for the polygamist sect. More than 400 children removed from the Yearning for Zion Ranch 2 months ago will be returned starting Monday. Guy Cote, the court-appointed coordinator for the case, says parents will have to show ID and promise to remain in the state.
The parents will be required to go to parenting class. The DNA will continue.
DNA testing is being done to determine who's related to whom. Sect leader Warren Jeffs, who's imprisoned in Kingman, Arizona, is being tested. CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan has that.
Thursday afternoon, Kingman police, a detective there, used a cheek swab to collect a sample from Jeff's mouth. The search warrant filed in Mojave County in Arizona in the Superior Court there says that records seized from the ranch show that Warren Jeffs, who's 51, 52 years old, was in the last couple of years married to two 12-year-old girls and two 14-year-old girls.
He was convicted of being an accomplice to rape by forcing a 14-year-old to marry her cousin. Now this.
Got a question. What's the worst thing about buying a used car? Could it be the uncertainty of not knowing what you're really getting? Bingo! Now I have an answer. Honda Certified Used Cars. They're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with an incredible 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Did the comfort level just go up in here? Thought so. Honda Certified Used Cars. It's the next best thing to new.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
In spring, love is in the air. And so are a lot of other things, like pollen, dust, and that old romance killer, ragweed. So if you want to be able to see the love light in her eyes or his eyes, make sure you get Clear Eyes Itchy Eye Relief. It clears up itchy, red, and watery eyes so that nothing comes between you and amore.
Mm.
Want Clear Eyes? Get Clear Eyes brand Itchy Eye Relief. Use as directed.
As former White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan makes the rounds defending his book bashing President Bush and his inner circle, the possibility has been raised that he'll be called to tell his story under oath, but would the administration allow it? CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
The White House says it could invoke executive privilege to prevent Scott McClellan from testifying to Congress about presidential deliberations.
Hypothetically, which I'm not supposed to answer hypotheticals. Yes, I think so. The law would allow for that. But by saying that, I'm not suggesting that that's what would happen or not happen.
Press Secretary Dana Perino says no such decision has yet been made. But a Democratic member of the House Judiciary Committee wants to hear McClellan speak under oath about a number of issues, including the firings of those U.S. attorneys. Mark Noller, CBS News, The White House.
Barack Obama has another pastor problem.
I'm white! I'm entitled! There's a black man stealing my show!
That's Reverend Michael Flager, a white Roman Catholic priest on the south side of Chicago, mocking Hillary Clinton's tears during the New Hampshire primary, suggesting she felt entitled to the Democratic nomination. Flager says he's sorry if he offended anyone. Obama says he's deeply disappointed. More from CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds.
Obama cannot
be expected to apologize for everything that has been said in the last two decades by any preacher on the South Side, but it is a distraction that is not welcome at a time when he's trying to direct fire and attention on John McCain.
Hillary Clinton, meanwhile, says she expects uncommitted convention delegates to start making up their minds pretty soon.
What I'm hoping is that delegates, including the so-called superdelegates, will ask themselves who they think is the better president to be our commander-in-chief and to turn the economy around, and who would be the stronger candidate against Senator McCain.
Tomorrow, the Democratic Rules Committee meets to decide on the premature primaries in Florida and Michigan and what to do with the delegates from those states. A breakthrough in the decades-old dispute between the United States and Libya. The State Department says they've agreed to try for a comprehensive settlement of the 1988 bombing of Pan Am 103 and other terrorist attacks blamed on Libyan agents. The families of victims would get compensation, and the two countries would move toward normalized relations. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
At Mercedes-Benz, every certified pre-owned vehicle comes with roadside assistance and warranty coverage for up to 5 years or 100,000 miles, ensuring that every certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz retains its integrity because, as a company, we have ours. Visit your local authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer for details.
See dealer for complete details on warranty coverage, 3 months assistance. Certified pre-owned limited warranty provides coverage for 1 year up to 100,000 total vehicle miles from the expiration date of the original 4-year 50,000-mile Mercedes-Benz new vehicle limited warranty or from the time of pre-owned purchase if the original limited warranty has expired.
Are we into the Olympics? Are you kidding? This is America. We high-five after meetings. We cheer when delayed planes land. So you better believe we're going to go nuts for our Olympic athletes. At AmericasCheer.com, hosted by Bank of America, you can send videos, photos, and texts directly to our Olympic team. Let them know you're out there. AmericasCheer.com. If you cheer, they'll hear. This is America. Don't you belong at Bank of America? Bank of Opportunity. Member FDIC.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media.
Really?
Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining me on the Peter B. Collins Show podcast of every hour available. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. Later this hour, we'll talk about that pesky subpoena that's been issued for Karl Rove and two other White House officials. Emily Berman from the New York University Brennan Center on the Law will be with us. This half hour, we're going to talk about the disastrous earthquake that struck China on May the 12th in northern Sichuan province. The devastation occurred. It was a 7.8 or 7.9 on the Richter scale. And those of us who live in earthquake country here in California certainly can relate to that and understand the impact. Official death toll currently stands at about 70,000, and officials say another 19,000 are missing and presumed dead. 87,000 confirmed injured. Hundreds of thousands of people have been dislocated and, in some cases, relocated. And a series of aftershocks have continued to cause problems in the recovery efforts as, in some areas, new lakes have formed because rivers have been backed up by shifting masses of earth. To get more on this, we turn to Jacques Leslie. He is a journalist who wrote a cover story for Mother Jones magazine that we discussed with him a few months ago about China's pollution problems. And he's also an expert on dams. He wrote the book Deep Water, The Epic Struggle Over Dams, Displaced People, and the Environment. And I believe that was published in 2005. Jacques Leslie, welcome back to our program.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be back, Peter.
Well, it's nice to talk with you. And these are difficult issues. Certainly a lot of lives hang in the balance, and many have been lost already. Let's talk first of all about these shifting land masses that have created a kind of instant lakes and caused some real problems where towns have been evacuated because those living downstream could be subject to a flash flood at almost any moment.
That's right. There have been approximately 34 quake lakes, as they're called, that have been created by the earthquake. I think the soil in that area is unusually fine, and so landslides happen easily. But these sorts of lakes occur with lots of earthquakes, so particularly when they're in a mountainous area, as this one was.
Mm-hmm. And the one that I think I've been seeing on television is a landslide dam near the Jian River, J-I-A-N. And this has created a lake that has been instantly named Tang Jiashan. And it is now threatening to overcome the barrier. And they're busy trying to create some sluices or sloughs to divert this water in a safe manner that doesn't threaten the people downstream. What is your sense of how these emergency projects have been going?
It's really hard to know from here how it's been going, but it's a good sign that so far that dam hasn't given way. It could give way at any time, and there have been lots of reports of heavy rain, which only exacerbates the problem. It's just impossible to say whether this can be done in time. There are evacuation plans that have been created almost instantaneously to get people out of the way. Most of the people who would be in the way of this monstrous flood that would occur if it does give way would have a few hours to get out of the way, and apparently most are confident that if it does collapse, that they will have time to get to high ground.
Mm-hmm.
It would take that long for that water to travel to reach them.
And of the 34 quake lakes that you enumerated,
mm-hmm.
Are they all, are many of them threatening population centers and critical in that way?
No, I don't think so. I think most of them are not, and that's why you've heard mostly about Tang Jiashan. Certainly that threatens by far the most people. It's likely that many of the others threaten very few people.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've traveled in China, but it's a huge country. Have you been to Sichuan?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So you don't have any first-person knowledge about the structures there, but we have seen reports even, from Chinese news sources, which can be circumspect, to say the least, acknowledging that, construction has not been of the of a sufficiently high quality, and particularly public buildings like schools appear to have been highly vulnerable, although in some cases there are towns that have been virtually completely destroyed by the earthquake and the aftershocks.
This is a problem throughout the developing world, not just in China, but there have been cases in many towns in China where a wealthy private school has remained while the public school next to it has collapsed. And of course, that's just enraged many people. What's been particularly interesting about the response to this earthquake is that really for the first time, Chinese have been expressing their fury at Chinese officials, and Chinese officials have felt an obligation to respond in some way. There was an extraordinary picture on the front page of the New York Times a couple of days ago in which a Communist Party official was bowing and begging forgiveness from the parent of a child who was killed in the earthquake and apparently was not getting it. That's just an extraordinary image, and it sort of turns on its head what we have come to expect of Communist Party officials. It suggests that this could be a harbinger of lots of other changes like that, leading towards a more responsive Chinese government.
Yeah, so, I mean, this could be an interesting opening. Many of these issues remain to play out. But let me ask you about this. China, of course, is a very guarded government and very careful in how they scrutinize outsiders. And there's been a lot of criticism in the Western media about the reaction, the response in Myanmar to Cyclone Nargis and the Irrawaddy River Delta area. area, and we've been critical of the dictators, the generals in Myanmar, for not being willing to accept aid from the United States. But it came with some rather blunt criticism from Laura Bush, the First Lady, and we attempted to deliver some of the first aid supplies via military warships. And I think those are signals that aren't received in a friendly way in Yangon or Rangoon, whatever you want to call it. How would you compare or contrast the reaction of Chinese officials?
Well, Chinese have been more open to outside aid than has certainly been the case since the Communist Party came to power in the late 1940s. They've accepted aid even from Taiwan and Japan, and those actions had diplomatic implications as well as simply aid implications. They were meant to show that the Chinese were opening to countries that have been diplomatic knots for them, and so they've used it in that way as well. There was a time when the Chinese Party relied entirely on its own efforts and refused all aid whenever there was any sort of crisis. And in fact, the last time there was a major earthquake, they not only refused all aid, but it was virtually impossible to get any information about it, and something like 240,000 people died in the city of Tangshan in northeastern China in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
So this contrasts dramatically with that, and it partly is a result of the age of the Internet. You can't suppress information anymore, and Chinese bloggers have been very active in discussing the response of the government to the emergency, and there was no way that the government could hide this if it was inclined to begin with.
Well, and on Friday, the New York Times reports that China has agreed to accept aid from Japan's military, and that, again, is remarkable given the history of those two nations. We're talking with Jacques Leslie here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment about the earthquakes in China and the other problems related to dams, feel free to give us a call at 888-5-PETER-B. Now, in some notes I got on your behalf, Jacques, it indicates that you report there are 391 small dams in the vicinity of the earthquake that have been damaged. And you also speculate, or at least you comment on speculation, that the reservoir behind the massive Three Gorges Dam that many people in the West are familiar with, it's been quite controversial, may even have helped trigger the earthquake. Talk a little bit about this relationship between dams and earthquakes.
Well, there is absolutely a connection. Dams do cause earthquakes, and in fact, when the Three Gorges Dam began the latest phase of filling the reservoir behind it in September 2006, since then there have been measured 822 small tremors that were caused by that. There have been earthquakes as large as a magnitude 6.3 tremor in India, in the state of Maharashtra, in 1967, that killed 180 people. So there's no question that seismic activity is activated because of the tremendous weight of the water in reservoirs. Now, the question as to whether Three Gorges had something to do with this earthquake, I think the answer is probably not. There are different fault lines, but there has been speculation to that effect. It's not entirely inconceivable, but I think it's unlikely. And do keep in mind, when you think about earthquakes and Three Gorges, that it has not yet completely filled.
Yeah.
It won't be filled until next year, and there have been hundreds of landslides along the banks of the reservoir that have killed people and will cause a great many more people to be moved than the 1.5 million that have already been moved to make way for this reservoir.
We're talking with journalist Jacques Leslie. His book about dams is called Deep Water, The Epic Struggle Over Dams, Displaced People, and the Environment. And you can read his most recent cover story for Mother Jones at motherjones.com. It's about China and its pollution problems linked to this summer's Olympic Games. As we continue, we're going to talk about the risk of earthquakes and dams here in the United States. And you can join our conversation toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Our schools are in trouble. Healthcare is a mess. The economy is broken. I get it. But we can get California back on track. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm running for state assembly because we can't send more politicians to Sacramento. I'm a leader in a group fighting foreign corporate control of our water, and we're winning. I was twice elected to our local school board, balancing budgets in tough times and seeing that kids didn't fall through the cracks. I started a green technology business, creating jobs with full health care benefits. And I was trained in making good public policy by Leon Panetta at the Panetta Institute. We can do a better job in California. We can grow our economy by investing in college education and green technology. But we need leaders who get it and who can get the job done. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm ready to get the job done for all of us. I would be honored to have your vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd. This message was paid for by my campaign, Spranger 2008.
Mark Hood for Judge is endorsed by the Monterey County Deputy Sheriff's Association, the Peace Officers Research Association of the Central Coast, and the union representing court employees. Mark Hood is the only candidate for judge who has 19 years' experience with major criminal prosecutions, plus significant civil experience with a leading firm. Tough on violent crime, smart on prevention. On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for Judge.
I'm Mark Hood, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Mark Hood Judge.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
I'm Jane Parker, and I'm running for Monterey County Supervisor. When Monterey County needed help on the problem of child abuse, I helped bring together schools, law enforcement, and social service providers. In the space of just 4 months, we developed a successful new program to protect children that helped hundreds of families in the first year. As supervisor, I'll tackle the problem of gang violence. We need to bring our communities together to keep our neighborhoods safe and our kids out of trouble. Learn more at electjaneparker.com and vote for me, Jane Parker, for supervisor on June 3rd.
Checking traffic on KRXA, good afternoon, and some serious problems for Highway 17 this afternoon. I will start with the older one first, southbound 17 at Laurel Road, an injury crash, motorcycle and two cars cleared to the shoulder, fire department on the scene, but they're tying up the right-hand lane of traffic backed up from Glenwood Drive, a separate crash southbound 17 at the Summit, a moving truck that was apparently parked on the northbound side of the freeway, rolled through the center divide, went down the southbound embankment, and now the cab of that truck is stuck up in the right-hand lane on the freeway. Some significant damage to the center divide, going to take them a while to get that repaired, so expect delays. Also north 17 at Highway 9, a cement mixer trailer. That's in the right-hand lane. For Salinas, Spreckles Boulevard at 68, solo crash car went off the roadway and landed in a ditch. CHP is on the scene with that, and this is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know that a flood-damaged car is like a ticking time bomb? Nearly half of these flooded cars get fixed up and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We've been talking about that almost 8-point earthquake that struck in Sichuan Province in China on May 12th and the devastation it's wrought, including the dams that are at risk. Our guest is Jacques Leslie, journalist and author of the book Deep Water, The Epic Struggle Over Dams, Displaced People, and the Environment. And Jacques Leslie, you wrote a piece that was published in early 2007 in the New York Times, which recounted some issues related to dams and waterways that I find a little frightening. First of all, the overview, there are about 100,000 dams in the United States, and most of them are not controlled or maintained by the Army's Corps of Engineers. I'm a boater, so I have actually been through many of the locks at dams that are managed by the Corps of Engineers, and those are the professional ones. But you mentioned that over 56% of these dams in the United States are privately owned. They're on private property, or in one form or another, they're not part of the public domain. So what is your assessment of the risk, let's start in California, that we face from earthquakes related to the many dams that we have here in the Golden State?
It's certainly significant, but this is a problem that spreads throughout the country. In 2005, the American Society of Civil Engineers rated the country's dam infrastructure with a grade of D, and nothing has happened since then to make you think it should be any higher than that, and perhaps a little lower. It is a significant problem, and there is an inventory of dams that's kept by the Army Corps of Engineers that places the number of dams in the country at almost 80,000, but then if you add up the inventories that each of the states keeps, it gets up to close to 100,000, and if you include all dams, not just those that meet the state definitions, which may vary but probably start at 15 or 20 feet high, mm-hmm. if you include all dams, then the number goes into several million, and no one even has any idea how many of those dams there are. And in fact, inspectors, when they go on their inspection trips, occasionally find one they didn't even know about.
Yeah. Well, I spend some time every summer up in the Sacramento River Delta, and on the one hand, it is a remarkable network of levees and waterways that are called sloughs, these little channels that connect up to the Sacramento and other tributaries, other river tributaries there. But I have to say, Jacques, every time I look around, you see a vulnerable berm, you see a levee that could easily be dislodged by a relatively minor earthquake event. And there have been studies following Hurricane Katrina on the status of the whole Sacramento River system. And it's put a lot of people at risk because homes have been built in areas where people now have a false sense of security that the dam will hold and they'll never be flooded.
That's exactly right. This is a phenomenon known as hazard creep, where a dam is built and may not threaten any lives when it's built, but then developers start putting in houses downstream from it, and the people who buy these houses have no idea that they're in any sort of danger, and then 25 or 50 years pass, and by that time, every dam needs repair, and often those repairs aren't done, and so those people are vulnerable.
Yeah, and in your article, you point out that many dams never get inspected, but among those that have been, a civil engineer's report it looks like 2006, showed that we have unsafe dams numbering at upwards of 3,500 in the United States alone.
Right. Those are dams that need repair and threaten human life.
Yeah. And we're not doing much to address it, are we, Jacques?
No, we're doing nothing to address it so far. There was a bill in Congress, in the last Congress, but the amount of money involved was in the something like $25 million, which is really nothing compared to what needs to be done, and that bill did not even make it out of committee. The estimates that I've seen for what it would cost to repair the dams that need repair and that threaten life range from $10 to $36 billion.
Wow. Well, maybe we could get some Iraqi contractors to come over. and work on it for us. Jacques, thank you very much. These are sobering matters, but I appreciate you sharing your information. And I want people to find your book, Deep Water, The Epic Struggle Over Dams, Displaced People, and the Environment. We've been talking with Jacques Leslie. And by the way, he's got a website, too, jacquesleslie.com, where you can get more information about his book. Thank you, Jacques.
Thank you, Peter.
Good to talk with you. We're going to take a break and return and talk about the subpoena that's been sent Karl Rove's way and two others of White House officials that are stuck in the pipeline. Emily Berman from New York University's Brennan Center on the Law will join me next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let's check the score. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Father Michael Flager is the latest preacher to become a YouTube hit, telling white people who don't want to be racist that they must give up their wealth.
Unless you're willing to give up the benefits, then you must be responsible for what was done in your generation.
And then he implied that the reason Hillary Clinton cried in New Hampshire is that Barack Obama might actually make such a thing happen.
She wasn't the only one crying. There was a whole lot of white people crying.
Which is why Barack Obama has now had to reject Father Mike's support. This is interesting to me in that Father Mike is the first Catholic preacher to be publicly convicted of hyperventilation. The Catholic priests I've known are more subdued in the pulpit. But then Father Mike is a moral crusader. He's demanded the shutdown of neighborhood stores that sell drug paraphernalia. He's launched boycotts against disrespectful rap music. He's gotten alcohol and tobacco billboards removed. But no question, he's a screamer. So, to review, we have, formerly on John McCain's side, Rod Parsley.
Where is the outrage?
And John Hagee.
And if God brings this nation into judgment, he will very likely release the terrorists.
And formerly on Barack Obama's side, Jeremiah Wright.
If you feel excited about something, be excited about
and
it.
And Michael Flager.
Where did you come from?
And so, by my count...
Getting noisy out there.
That's a tie. Say, I hope all this is helping you make an informed choice, because in the media, that's what we're all about. Now this. This is Dave Ross, on the web at DaveRoss.com.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh, boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call...
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Good vibrations.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Minutes after the hour. Thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show. Either live, delayed, or by podcast, it all works.
From the heavens, it was easy to tell. It was love from above that could save me from hell. She'd fire in her soul, it was easy to see how the devil himself could be pulled out of me. There were drums in the air as she started to dance. Every soul in the room keeping time with her hands. And we sang,
this half hour, I'm joined by Emily Berman from the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. Emily, welcome.
Hi.
Nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm very interested in a brief that the Brennan Center for Justice and an interesting group of organizations, some conservative, some not, have filed with the district court in Washington. And this is an effort to enforce the subpoenas that have been issued to three Bush administration officials, one present, two former. Karl Rove, most recently, was the recipient of one of these special citations from the House Judiciary Committee related to the case of Don Siegelman, the former Democratic governor of Alabama. And by the way, Governor Siegelman was a guest on our show earlier this week. It was on Wednesday. And if you go to peterbcollins.com, you can link through to the archives and podcasts and catch up with that in case you didn't hear it when we broadcast it earlier. But the other two subpoenas come out of the efforts to investigate the U.S. attorney scandals, pardon me. And those are, they name Harriet Myers, the former White House counsel and a one-time Supreme Court nominee, and Joshua Bolten, who remains the chief of staff in Bush's White House. So first of all, tell us about the process here, Emily. How does it normally work when a House committee issues a subpoena which is rebuffed by the White House? What mechanism do they have to enforce their demand?
Well, it's an interesting question because it very rarely comes about. Usually, the way that congressional investigations get information from the executive branch is it begins with an informal request for information, and usually there's some sort of negotiation and accommodation process. If there's information that the executive agency or the White House doesn't want to share, they'll negotiate and go back and forth until they reach a solution that each side's happy with.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the negotiation efforts have come to naught, and so things continued to escalate to the point where the subpoenas were issued. The president instructed Harriet Myers and Joshua Bolten to decline Congress's request to appear before them via subpoena on the basis of executive privilege. And in response to their failure to appear at the hearings for which they were subpoenaed, the House of Representatives held them in contempt of Congress, which is actually a criminal violation. There's a criminal statute. And so the way that the statute envisions this happening is that once Congress has voted, or one House of Congress has voted to hold someone in contempt, that contempt citation is referred to the Justice Department, where the U.S. attorney is supposed to convene a grand jury and begin the process of a prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the Justice Department has a policy that if the subject of the subpoena is an executive official who is held in contempt because they have followed the president's instructions to assert executive privilege, the Justice Department will not prosecute. So the parties have really reached an impasse at that point where Congress has subpoenaed these officials. They have refused to comply. The Justice Department has refused to force them to comply, and that's the point at which the House Judiciary Committee filed the suit as really the only mechanism they had available to them to get these subpoenas enforced.
Now, Emily Berman, you're the one with the law degree here, and I'll point out that you graduated magna cum laude from New York University School of Law. Perhaps you know this precedent, perhaps you don't. But my non-legal training is really just reading the newspaper every day for 40-plus years. As I recall, the showdown over executive privilege back in the Watergate-Nixon days was largely left unresolved, that the Supreme Court declined to issue clear rulings and set a clear precedent on executive privilege, preferring to kind of leave it a little murky. And the way it is read is that the court wanted to see the executive branch and the legislative branch work this out without being bigfooted by the judicial branch. Is that a fair statement of the history here?
Yes and no. To the extent that the Watergate era precedents really did establish what the law was with respect to executive privilege, it fairly clearly stated that executive privilege is not an absolute privilege, which is to say, at the time, President Nixon was saying, it's up to me, it's executive privilege, it's my privilege, it's up to me to decide what information I'm going to give to Congress. And the court said, no, you can say that information is privileged, but it's up to the courts to decide if the request for the information is important enough that we're going to say that the privilege is overcome. So the one very clear precedent from the Nixon era is that executive privilege is not absolute and that a court can demand that the president turn over information sometimes even when he doesn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as clear how far privilege extends, whether it extends to presidential advisors as well as to the president himself, whether it extends to all material or only material related to particular presidential duties. Those sorts of things remain unclear. And it's also unclear that particular case in the Nixon era was about a criminal prosecution.
Right.
So the information was being requested by a prosecutor, whereas here it's a congressional committee.
Mm-hmm.
So those cases didn't establish exactly what Congress must show to get the information from the president. But the important thing about this case is we haven't even reached that stage yet where the court would be weighing, is the president's interest in confidentiality more important than Congress's interest in getting to the bottom of this investigation? Because the defendants have said the court doesn't even have the power to hear this case. They need to throw Congress out of court.
Oh boy.
And tell them to find some other way to pursue their investigation.
Well, that'll drag it out for years.
It's possible that it will. The it's on an expedited schedule in the attempt to prevent it from dragging on for too long. But the cynical side of me definitely thinks that trying to play out the clock is a part of what's going on here.
Indeed. Emily Berman with us from the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. If you have a question or a comment about the subpoenas for Karl Rove, Joshua Bolton, or Harriet Myers, feel free to give us a call. She's with us till the top of the hour. And lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, Emily, from my perspective, I see two critical people here who could play the role of obstructionist. One is a guy named Fred Fielding, who's in his, 70s or 80s, and he was actually there helping Nixon put that stonewall in place back in the Watergate era. And he is the White House counsel and is presumed to be an expert on these executive privilege issues. Have you seen his fingerprints or his mark in any way on the legal maneuvering that the White House has employed to date?
So he's all over it. It's a bit of an inside baseball point probably, but you're right that he was one of President Nixon's lawyers. He also, perhaps more importantly, was White House counsel to Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
During the last time that there was a real sort of executive privilege flare-up.
Right.
Someone once said to me, the executive privilege is like locusts. It comes around about every 17 years. And I think it's a good analogy. The last time that an executive official was held in contempt of Congress was during the Reagan era, and it was the administrator of the EPA who was refusing to turn over documents regarding some EPA investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And she has actually written a biography since that time explaining that she was willing to comply with Congress's request, but that the White House and Fred Fielding in particular was very adamant about guarding the presidential prerogatives that he thought.
Her name was Ann Gorsuch, right?
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. See, I was there. Now, the other one who I regard as a potential obstructionist here is the Attorney General, the new one, who was, whisked through the confirmation process mainly because he wasn't Alberto Gonzalez. But he's proven to be quite an adversary. And Michael Mukasey has taken the position on other issues, for example, on torture, that he essentially would not play the constitutional role devised for the Attorney General to enforce our laws on those in the government who violate them. And so when it comes to this issue of executive privilege, he seems to be a very weak character in terms of relying on the Justice Department to provide the function that's envisioned for it, which is it is supposed to enforce the subpoena of Congress on the executive branch.
Yeah, I mean, that point really raises one of the fundamental questions and really the reason that the Brennan Center was motivated to intervene in this case. As you pointed out, it's sort of a strange mix of bedfellows that have joined our brief, including watchdog organizations from both the left and the right, because what's fundamentally at stake in this case is Congress's ability to exercise its oversight function of the executive branch. And the point that you raise about Mike Mukasey plays into this, because what you're asking the executive branch to do in those sorts of instances is really to be the judge in its own court. You're giving the people who have an interest in seeing the outcome of the case control over whether prosecutions go forward or not. And it's the fear of that very power all being controlled within one branch that really motivated the founders to create the constitutional system of separated powers, where each branch would have a role in policing the other's use of power. And so that's really what Congress is attempting to do in their investigation into the U.S. attorney firings, is to figure out whether the Justice Department has been improperly enforcing the criminal laws.
Right.
And so in order for it to be able to fulfill that function, the courts need to allow the suit to go forward. They need to make sure that the subpoenas get enforced, because as we've seen, you can't rely on the executive branch alone to police its own activities effectively.
Indeed. We're going to take a break and return with Emily Berman from the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law. We're talking about the subpoenas issued by congressional committees for Harriet Myers, Joshua Bolten, and Karl Rove. Will they be enforced? And will these former and, in one case, present administration officials be required to testify before Bush leaves office? We'll pursue that in a moment. Here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Check checking traffic on KRXA, and we'll start you off with a major problem in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Southbound 17 at the summit, what we have is a moving truck that rolled through the northbound center divide and went down the embankment on the southbound side of 17. Both southbound lanes and the left lane on northbound 17 will be blocked as the tow truck works to bring that vehicle back up onto the roadway. Right now, it looks like traffic backed up from Idlewild, but quickly getting worse. If you can avoid 17, be a pretty good idea right about now. From Monterey, eastbound 68 connector ramp to southbound Highway 1, crash with a tour bus and a car. Looks like it is blocking that connector ramp, and that is causing some delays there. And northbound 101 before Dunbarton Road, multiple goats apparently walking near the roadway, so drive with caution there. This is brought to you by Centrum Silver. Centrum Silver age-adjusted multivitamins help protect your health as you age with key antioxidants that help support natural cell repair. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Perhaps, if you think about it, all the dragons of our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us just once, beautiful and brave. Perhaps everything terrible in our life is really nothing but something in its deepest form that needs our love and our understanding. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm honored to be on KRXA every Saturday and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And I hope you'll come and join me for what I'd like to think of as a little Zen twist. My program, Aspire, is the breath of spirit, and it is there to help you in every which way. Loosen up your thinking a little bit and come to a moment in your life where you can feel the presence of something that is greater than your worries and sorrows. Hey, don't just sit there. Come aspire with me.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes in front of the hour. My guest is Emily Berman from the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. And we're talking about the subpoenas that have been issued for Rove, Myers, and Bolton by committees on Capitol Hill. And Emily, in your view, do the disclosures in Scott McClellan's book and the interviews that he's given, while they don't directly relate to the U.S. Attorney's case and they don't directly relate to Karl Rove and the Don Siegelman case, they show a breathtaking level of deception by this administration, a kind of secrecy that we haven't seen in modern times. And it also shows that at least attorneys general were complicit in some of the misdeeds of the Bush administration that have been identified. But in your view, does McClellan's admissions, do they add anything to the mix here?
Well, I definitely think they're relevant insofar as his main point in that book seems to be that there's this culture of constant campaigning going on, even for an administration that's in office and should be concerned more about governing than mm-hmm. about campaigning. Mm-hmm. And the allegations that are at issue in the U.S. Attorney's investigations is that the criminal laws were used to give partisan political advantage to Bush allies and to disadvantage Bush opponents. And so to the extent that you look at your time in government as nothing more than an opportunity to stay in government, I think that that's definitely consistent. And, you know, of course, we don't know what allegations are true or what Congress might find if it's permitted to go ahead with this investigation. And I don't want to come to any conclusions on that here. But the allegations about the U.S. attorney situation are certainly consistent with that idea of the constant campaign.
Well, and the Don Siegelman case really has threads of many of the scandals. There are tainted U.S. attorneys doing the bidding of officials in Washington. There are corrupt prosecutors who get promoted to judge. There's a judge who should have recused himself. Don Siegelman had an election stolen from him. And I believe that when we know the full breadth and depth of the U.S. attorney scandal, we'll see that one of the arteries there was about suppressing voter turnout, manipulating vote counts when it was helpful to Republicans, and creating phony cases of voter fraud to cover up what I saw as more widespread election fraud committed by officials who were in charge of the electoral process. Do you see those outlines?
I think it all definitely plays into the larger picture. And I should mention that we weren't the only organization that filed a friend of the court brief in this case. There was also a very well done and persuasive brief filed by a group of former U.S. attorneys from both sides of the aisle. Again, people who had been appointed dating back to the Johnson administration all the way through George W. Bush appointees, really making that point about how important it is that the use of the criminal justice system and prosecutions be kept above the political fray. And it seems that in this administration there really hasn't been anything that's been kept above the political fray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, Emily, how did you cobble together the group of people signing on to this brief? Because we know CREW very well, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Melanie Sloan appears on our show just about every week. But when I saw that the Rutherford Institute, which is a very conservative group, and Judicial Watch, likewise a very conservative group, at first it gave me pause, and then I said, well, wait a minute. If they agree that executive privilege should not be used for partisan political reasons to prevent embarrassment or prevent important information from coming out, then this comes across as a nonpartisan approach to exploring these legal challenges.
Yeah, that's absolutely a point that we were trying to get across. People may recall the Rutherford Institute as the people who brought you the Paula Jones case.
That's right.
And I think it does speak to the importance of these issues, as I said earlier, to the fundamental constitutional structure of American democracy, because those conservative organizations recognize that, you know, at some point this may be an Obama administration or a Clinton administration and a Republican majority in Congress trying to conduct an investigation. And it's just as important in those times for the executive branch to be subject to the oversight of Congress as it is in this particular instance, and not to see that is really sort of short-sighted. So our brief is filed on behalf of bipartisan organizations, as I said, the group of U.S. attorneys that filed a brief is very bipartisan.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bipartisan group of elected officials who've also weighed in. There's really no interested constituency here that sees what's going on as anything other than setting a very dangerous precedent potentially.
Emily, on another matter, Kyle Sampson, a former number two at the Gonzales Justice Department, talked about how, well, we're just going to gum it to death and run out the clock. And will your brief help speed up this process? And will we see resolution before the end of the Bush term?
Well, we sure hope so. One thing that we're hoping is that there's a hearing at the end of June on the defendant's motion to dismiss the case, to throw it out of court. And one possibility that I hold out hope for is that if the judge denies that motion to dismiss and says, no, I'm going to go ahead and hear this case and we're going to determine who should win, that that might bring the White House back to the negotiating table because they're currently unwilling to budge from the position they're in. So that's one possibility, is it could be resolved outside of court, which would really be the fastest way for things to go.
And if that fails, do you think the Democrats should make a political issue of this in the fall campaigns?
Well, I do think that it's it's important to get to the bottom of what happened. And whether they do it through political pressure in the campaign, or another possibility is that a new Justice Department could come in and decide maybe they should go forward with these prosecutions, or maybe they should turn over documents that they have in their possession. So the situation definitely will change in the fall and with the new administration, and we'll just have to sort of wait and see what happens with the case then.
Emily, thank you for your work, and we'll talk again.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Berman from New York University's Brennan Center for Justice.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. An agreement to return children to their polygamous parents collapsed late today when a Texas judge refused to sign off on it. CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan is covering.
I don't know if the deal fell apart as much as the lawyers frustrated the heck out of the judge. The judge was incredibly accommodating all day long. When she walked into the courtroom at 2 p.m., there was a tentative proposal that was agreed upon by some lawyers and CPS, and the judge was taking a look at it. So she opened it up essentially for a public comment, and this is an example of how difficult it is to get 300 or 400 lawyers to agree on anything.
Polygamist elder Willie Jessup is frustrated.
There is total confusion, no specific order to grant the relief that could have been given, that could have let parents go pick up children.
The reunions were supposed to begin Monday. The Democratic Rules Committee meets in Washington tomorrow for a decision on the convention delegates from Florida and Michigan. Those states held early primaries in defiance of the party. Hillary Clinton says their votes should count, even though they're not likely to change the outcome. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive has more.
Though most senior Democrats say she hardly has a chance, Clinton is not giving up. She's favored in Puerto Rico's primary on Sunday, but Barack Obama seems to be ahead in the final two primaries, both on Tuesday in South Dakota and Montana. And then?
After the final primaries, people are going to start making up their minds. I think that's the natural progression that one would expect.
And Clinton told reporters she hopes superdelegates will ask who'd be the better candidate and better president. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
The Clinton campaign in public remains upbeat, but CBS News chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer says that might not last much longer.
They were talking this week as if, you know, they were going to continue to protest and go right on. I think you're going to see next week a real change here, and I think they're going to pretty much acknowledge it's done.
Republican John McCain has been having informal meetings with potential running mates, and at this point he's not ruling anyone out.
That the person I choose will share my values, my principles, and my goals, and my ideals. And for me to say I am not selecting this kind of person or not selecting that type of person, I don't think is appropriate for the process or right now.
For the second time in 2 months, New York City has suffered a deadly crane collapse. Two construction workers were killed this morning when a 200-foot crane being used to build a high-rise condominium suddenly snapped and crashed into an apartment building nearby. In March, a crane collapse killed 7 people. Mayor Mike Bloomberg went to the scene.
What has happened is unacceptable and intolerable. Having said that, we do not at the moment know exactly what happened or why.
After the first tragedy, the city stepped up inspections and shook up its buildings department. The price of oil up $1 to $124.61 a barrel. The Dow fell 7 points today. This is CBS News.
Hey guys, why beat the heat when you can enjoy it? Head in now to the men's store inside JCPenney and enjoy great deals on summer styles during Haggar Week. Through Saturday, get great deals on all your favorite Haggar clothes at the JCPenney hottest sale of the season. 50% off all Haggar shirts, shorts, and pants, plus 50% off all Haggar suit separates. Seriously, the heat doesn't deserve a beating. It deserves the hottest sale of the season. The men's store is the smart place to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
When peanuts are kettle roasted, they're extra crunchy, like Planters kettle roasted peanuts. Here to explain, kettle expert Kilgore the Ogre.
First, you get kettle ready. Hey, where am I crunching nut kettle?
It's right here.
Meshek Village.
No, it's over here. It's Rick the Apothecary.
Run away.
I guess it's all about the kettle roasting. Extra crunchy kettle roasted peanuts. New from Planters.
Mmm.
Planters, instinctively good.
Air guitarists, this one's for you.
Gotta start here with Chuck Berry's Johnny B. Goode from 1958. It was playing the guitar like ringing a bell. Clear, crisp, in a haze. Jimi Hendrix's classic is next on Rolling Stone's Greatest Guitar Songs of All Time. Can't leave out Clapton and Crossroads. Keith Richards played a guitar missing a string, but he didn't miss anything on Brown Sugar, one of the 100 top riffs listed. Dwayne Allman on slide guitar playing Statesboro Blues made it, as did Jimmy Page's iconic masterpiece, Taking You to Rock Heaven. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
Police in Arvada, Colorado are looking for 2 men in their 20s who robbed a gas station convenience store, making off with cash and cigarettes. During the heist, the robbers wore women's thong underwear over their faces. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Got a question. What's the worst thing about buying a used car? Could it be the uncertainty of not knowing what you're really getting? Bingo! Now I have an answer. Honda Certified Used Cars. They're well-maintained late-model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then is backed with an incredible 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. Did the comfort level just go up in here? Thought so. Honda Certified Used Cars. It's the next best thing to new.
See dealer for limited warranty details.
In spring, love is in the air. And so are a lot of other things, like pollen, dust, and that old romance killer, ragweed. So if you want to be able to see the love light in her eyes or his eyes, make sure you get Clear Eyes Itchy Eye Relief. It clears up itchy, red, and watery eyes so that nothing comes between you and amore.
Mm.
Want Clear Eyes? Get Clear Eyes brand Itchy Eye Relief. Use as directed.
Live from the Left Coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I am your humble host, Peter B.
That was easy.
That's the easiest part. Remembering my name, I can usually do that. Every week about this time, we set aside an hour to talk about election integrity issues because our elections just don't have enough integrity in this country. And our go-to guy is the editor, publisher, and chief bottle washer at bradblog.com, his Bradness, Bradley Friedman. Hey, Brad.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay today. How about you?
Well, lots of bottles to wash, but other than that, hanging in there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Somebody gave me a new gizmo here that's available for less than $10 at Staples Office Supply.
That was easy.
And it's a button, a big red button that you put on your desk, and it's just marked easy.
I've seen those myself, actually, and There's a big yellow one like that that's on the back of the Sequoia voting machine. You may be familiar with.
That was easy.
Well, Brad, before we dive into some election issues, I just wanted to reference a clip at the Brad blog that ties into our discussion in the immediately preceding segment with Emily Berman of the Brennan Center at New York University's Law School. And it has to do with enforcing these subpoenas that have been issued to Karl Rove, Harriet Myers, and Joshua Bolten. And one of your blog buddies, Alan Breslauer, caught up with Joe Wilson, who, of course, is now at the center of Scott McClellan's brouhaha and also has a personal interest in seeing the Rove subpoena honored. The case for Rove is related to Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, who was on our show Wednesday this week. But I think Wilson has a generalized interest in seeing Karl Rove brought to justice.
But indeed, and I suspect if they are actually able to get Scott McClellan in there, as they're talking about doing, then there'll be still more interest in Karl Rove and exactly what did and didn't happen with this CIA leak, which is still just remarkable to me, and I guess Joe Wilson shares that opinion, remarkable to me that, you know, we've said it many times. But what we've got is a case of the first time in the history of this nation when a White House has outed a covert CIA operative. It is huge. It is treason. And it is simply remarkable that it's still sitting there and essentially nothing has been done about it. It was the day of the Rove subpoena last week that Alan was at an event where Joe Wilson was speaking, and he specifically asked him about the subpoena. And this is where Wilson and I certainly are in agreement, where Wilson said, "It's amazing to me the extent to which these guys have operated with absolute impunity, absolute disregard for American law and American jurisprudence." I guess it's getting kind of tired to hear that by now.
Well, and
that
Brad,
is the case, and it's frustrating that the Judiciary Committee, while, you know, they make noises about bringing folks in for subpoenas and stuff, they don't seem as if they're really ready to do what they need to do here, do they?
Well, I don't know if Waxman could pull this off, but I feel like they need to deputize a producer on the set at the Today Show. Because just think, if Scott McClellan's comments to Meredith Vieira had been under oath. Because what he said is breathtaking. He said that he asked, he relayed a question from a reporter to the president, which was, "Didn't you authorize the declassification of the National Intelligence Estimate that ultimately was responsible for revealing the identity of Valerie Plame at the CIA?" And the president said, "Yes, I did that."
That's right. And, you know, he may or may not be able to make a legal case for him having done that, but that's the purpose of congressional oversight. And the questions that we're seeing, you know, from Meredith Vieira on the Today Show and, frankly, from Karl Rove on, you know, on Fox News, these are the kind of questions that need to be asked under oath in front of the Judiciary Committee, and it's just not happening. And it's maddening, it's frustrating, because the bottom line is we still don't really know everything that happened there. And as Patrick Fitzgerald said when he sort of put the case on hold, is that, you know, Scooter Libby kicked sand into the eyes of the umpire. So we don't really know what happened. And, you know, at this rate, I don't know if we ever will until John Conyers says, you know what, I'm going to use the inherent contempt option, which means he sends out the sergeant of arms to start arresting people. And if need be, throw them in the prison that is in the basement of the Capitol building. It's gotten to that point. That's what has to be done, because other than that, I'm not sure what else one can do.
Yeah, yeah. It is amazing, and it once again points up, and I am happy to convey this to people, that I was first skeptical of the whole idea of impeachment. And before Cindy Sheehan took her trip to Crawford for the first Camp Casey, she and I had this conversation, and she changed my mind. She said, "Peter, you know, you got to let the process go forward. And consider, Brad, if any time in the last year and a half, It's been 2 years now since McClellan left the White House. But any time since then, and since the Democrats took control, if they had called him to testify before an impeachment committee, this information would have come out, and it is so cut and dried. It shows the president complicit in this whole sequence of events that violated the law and outed Valerie Plame's identity, and that this was a conscious political action on the part of the president and his cronies. If that had been developed in testimony before an impeachment committee in the House, that's the group that sits and essentially evaluates the charges, then there would have been enough evidence, I think, to present to a trial in the Senate. And at a certain point, incontrovertible evidence cannot be ignored, even by the most political members of the United States Senate.
There would have been, and frankly, there is a mountain of such evidence. And I very much, when I heard what McClellan had to say, I immediately thought of John Dean, who, you know, under oath during those hearings in the Judiciary Committee back in, what was it, 1973, was asked a similar question. You know, is there a listening device in the Oval Office? And that changed everything. That's what those oversight hearings are meant to be for. Impeachment is in itself not conviction. It is part of the process to determine if there is a reason for conviction. And yeah, I believe had you gotten these guys under oath, it would have been crystal clear that high crimes and misdemeanors were occurred just every which way. And but that procedure has been successful. Well, it was successfully blocked certainly by the Republicans up through 2006, and unfortunately Democrats came in 2006, and instead of doing what they should have done, they made political calculations, and I think frankly political miscalculations.
Well, and Brad, I commend you as a man of your youth to cite John Dean, I think, is commendable. And I give credit to Keith Olbermann, who spent 54 minutes or so with Scott McClellan and then saved his last segment for John Dean. I thought that was pretty powerful stuff.
Which I hadn't actually seen, but I want to commend you for noting my youth.
Brad Friedman with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question for him, he's here this entire hour, and we can talk about election issues, those pesky machines. We've got problems that have surfaced in Arkansas about the so-called paper trails. We'll get into that. And, Brad, I enjoyed reading your review and description of how you and some friends of the election integrity bent gathered to watch HBO's recount film last weekend.
I thought it was an extraordinary film, actually, and while there were a couple of quibbles one might have about some telling of some of the facts that weren't told, I thought overall they did an extraordinary job of taking those incredible 36 days, which I remember all too well, and compressing them down into 2 hours and really telling the story in what I believe was actually a fair and balanced manner. And I think it was a hell of an indictment against, frankly, against the Republicans and the way they gamed the system. And I tried to talk about in my review about how those very same problems that existed back in 2000 are still haunting us today, and how, you know, as incredible as that was back in 2000, the fact that here we are 8 years later and our system is at least as vulnerable to that sort of manipulation as it was 8 years ago. Nothing has been corrected, and if anything, things have gotten arguably worse. It's very troubling. Did you get to watch the film, by the way?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I thought it was very well done. My quibble with it was I thought they were too easy on the networks in the role that they played. And I don't recall a scene where they basically showed that a Bush family cousin was the decision maker at Fox News who flipped Florida for Bush in the middle of the night.
You're right. And, of course, I think it was, by and large, it was based on four different books, presumably about the election. All of those books were actually written by, either the New York Times or network guys like Jake Tapper at ABC. So that might explain why you're right. The media did get a bit of a pass in this case, but that was a lot of information to get into 2 hours in a cogent way that was both understandable and entertaining. And I think they succeeded on that level. But you're certainly right. The corporate media got a big pass that they certainly didn't deserve, and they still don't deserve because they're still no better and, again, arguably worse than they were back in 2000.
Well, we'll talk more about it after the break. I think the casting was inspired. I think it was very well written. And I think given the fact that most Americans knew how it was going to turn out, that they kept it interesting and dramatic all the way through.
Yeah, don't give away the ending.
Yeah, I'll try. Of course, you've got a voting machine with Chad.
I do.
Read all about it at bradblog.com. We're going to take a break and resume with Brad. And I'm going to ask him the question, do you think Hillary Clinton saw either hacking democracy or recount? Because she now wants to count every vote in Florida. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Our schools are in trouble. Healthcare is a mess. The economy is broken. I get it. But we can get California back on track. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm running for state assembly because we can't send more politicians to Sacramento. I'm a leader in a group fighting foreign corporate control of our water, and we're winning. I was twice elected to our local school board, balancing budgets in tough times and seeing that kids didn't fall through the cracks. I started a green technology business, creating jobs with full health care benefits. And I was trained in making good public policy by Leon Panetta at the Panetta Institute. We can do a better job in California. We can grow our economy by investing in college education and green technology. But we need leaders who get it and who can get the job done. I'm Barbara Spranger, and I'm ready to get the job done for all of us. I would be honored to have your vote in the Democratic primary on June 3rd. This message was paid for by my campaign, Spranger 2008.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way and the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge. Mark Hood has devoted his life to protecting communities from crime. With 19 years as a criminal prosecutor and significant civil experience, Mark Hood has handled thousands of cases, including murder, crime by gang members, kidnapping, and fraud. Praised by judges, fellow prosecutors, and defense attorneys alike, and endorsed by law enforcement. On June 3rd, vote Mark Hood for judge.
I'm Mark Hood, and I approve this message.
Paid for by the committee to elect Mark Hood judge.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Make this the year you become personally acquainted with the May family and Jim's Restaurant at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.50 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and we have a major problem for the Santa Cruz Mountains right now. Southbound 17 at the Summit, moving truck rolled through the northbound center divide and went down the embankment on the southbound side of Highway 17. It looks like only the left lane is open on the southbound side. Both of the northbound lanes of Highway 17 shut down, and traffic is getting by on the right-hand shoulder. South 17 slows from the Lexington Reservoir. Northbound traffic also beginning to back up right now. A crash coming in for Prunedale or Aroma. Southbound 101 at San Juan Road. Two cars, it looks like that's safely off to the right-hand shoulder. Down near King City, South 101 after 146, we have someone a little close to the roadway there, apparently hitchhiking. Just drive with caution if you find yourself in the area. Highway 68 currently checking in, stalling accident-free, and you are seeing some heavy traffic at the Fishhook in Santa Cruz. This is brought to you by JCPenney. It's Hagar Week at the men's store inside JCPenney. Great deals on Hagar clothes make the men's store the smart place to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney, I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. Greetings to our weekend listeners in Seattle and Portland. You can drop me an email. It's peter@peterbcollins.com. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And we're talking right now about the Recount movie that's on HBO. And if you get HBO and you didn't get to see it, they play them over and over again on the different HBO channels. And it's also available on demand on cable systems that offer that option. So grab a group of friends and throw a little party. Bring your own popcorn with some Chad in there. And I hope you do get a chance to see it. And, Brad, one of the things that I wanted to comment on is the role that Warren Christopher played. And I thought the movie really brought that out because that all went on behind the scenes and, frankly, didn't get covered very well. But while James Baker, the consigliere of the Bush family, was playing hardball, Warren Christopher was playing old-style diplomacy and didn't realize he was getting snookered until pretty late in the process.
It has the ring of truth to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially when you're dealing with Democrats. Now, to be fair, Warren Christopher has objected to the way he was portrayed in the film. But from what I can tell, from the way that the Republicans and the Democrats behaved during the process, as I recall it happening live, it seemed quite on the money to me. Now, I don't know what he did behind the scenes, but, you know, along the lines of what the way they portrayed William Christopher was this matter of the military ballots, where you had all of these ballots that had come in after the election had ended, and they came in. They were military overseas ballots. They did not have dates stamped on them. There was no witness or signed to them at all. Hundreds of them came in. The Gore campaign originally said, well, they should not be counted, and I agree, because they were not legal ballots.
Right.
But then they were bullied by the Republicans. Oh, you know, Gore hates the military or whatever it was. And unfortunately, Joe Lieberman, as the movie tells it, was the one who went on Meet the Press and said, of course we're going to count every military ballot. Now, had those ballots not been counted, and there were several thousands of them, I think that even with the counts they had, Gore would have been named the winner. And I should add, because I didn't mention it in the previous segment, but I should add that Gore was the winner in that he received more votes across the state than did George W. Bush. Period.
Yeah, and what's her name, Alessandra Stanley, in the New York Times, in reviewing the film, got that wrong, and so I'm happy to repeat your accurate statement.
She got that wrong, even though the New York Times got it right when that study was originally reported, the study that was based on having counted all of those ballots. The New York Times got it right if you were if you read the original article closely on November 12, 2001. The headline was misleading, but the information was there, and the study itself is still there and linked at Brad Blog, showing that when they counted every ballot in the state of Florida by any means, whether it was by any standards, whether you wanted to count hanging chads, dimpled chads, etc., Al Gore always came out the winner.
And, Brad, another way that this Recount movie got it right about the stolen election of 2000 is that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, that's true. They weren't. And all of a sudden, Hillary suddenly cares about counting the votes in Florida this year.
I wanted to raise that because I find it infuriating.
Yeah.
And it shows a kind of opportunism to me that I think, unfortunately, defines her candidacy. But here was someone who was running for the Senate. She got elected comfortably in November of 2000, and she had nothing to lose by supporting Al Gore And she could have done it much more publicly. Likewise, the lame duck president had nothing to lose by supporting the Democratic side of this battle over the votes in Florida. And for her at this time to, in a self-serving way, now say that she wants every vote counted, when we know that it wasn't a fair primary in January of this year in Florida, it just infuriates me.
Yeah, she wasn't a big supporter of counting every vote back in 2004 either. So yeah, it's very opportunistic. I'm sorry to see it. You had asked before the break if I thought that she might have seen recount. Well, given the fact that she referenced it before it aired, and then once I saw it, and once I saw what they had to say about Bill Clinton in the final scene, I suspect she didn't see it. Otherwise, I suspect she might not have recommended it quite as strongly.
Indeed, yeah. anything else you want to mention? We got about 30 seconds here on recount.
Well, no, other than, you know, people really need to see it and share it with folks because history is has been miswritten, and somebody out there has to correct the record. George W. Bush should never have been in the White House, period.
Well, and Catherine Harris was beautifully played by Laura Dern.
Oh, she was indeed, and not overplayed either, underplayed, if anything, I would argue.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman. We'll talk about some election protection issues, and if you have a question or comment, you can call us now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Looking for ways to improve and beautify your landscape with sound environmental practices and enjoy seasonal produce from your own land? Well, Tree of Life Ecological Services offers landscaping and design to suit your specific garden needs, large or small. Contact Tree of Life Ecological Services at treeoflifees.com or call 831-566-EDEN. That's 566-3336.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero & Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark LaCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale, and I'm currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark LaCluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
For those of you that think that gospel music has gone too far, you think we've gotten too radical with our message, well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory!
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I wanted to issue an all-points bulletin. Beware. On a Fox News channel near you, you may see a shocking new Obama church video. And those words, that phrase, shocking new Obama church video, get this. It's a video that was taken recently at the Trinity Church in Chicago, and it wasn't Jeremiah Wright, and it wasn't even the guy who has replaced him. It was a visiting preacher, a Catholic priest named Michael Flager, and he made some comments about the political campaign that were not too flattering to Hillary Clinton, and he did touch on the fact that she's white and Obama isn't. And a right-wing website called WorldNet Daily is trying to promote this into wider circulation. And I haven't slipped lately and fallen off the wagon and watched any of the Fox News Channel, but maybe I'll have to, because I imagine this one's going to pop up. Brad, has this shown up on your radar, too?
Yeah, I heard about it this morning, actually, on Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, okay.
So it's certainly on their radar. And I think that you also forgot to note that I think Obama is not even at that church anymore.
No, well, he wasn't there. But
he certainly wasn't there.
The headline reads, shocking new Obama church video released.
Yeah.
It's just completely misleading.
Yeah, and that is the fellow, by the way, who I think is great. He's the guy who answered to the Fox News ambush reporter, Michael Flager, that we ran a video a few weeks back at Bradblog.
Oh, okay.
And that's the same fella. He's a Catholic priest. He's actually white. And he's sort of going on about the fact that Hillary felt she was entitled, he believes, because she was white and he was black or something like that. It's just silliness. Has nothing to do with anything, frankly. But just more of the right wing media. I'm sorry, that liberal media.
Yeah,
and
we just can't shake it.
Cover these things.
And Brad Friedman, you get to choose the news next. You want to go to Arizona or Arkansas?
Let's see. Well, let's go to Arizona. Some good news there.
All right, that's Pima County, and we've been following this lawsuit for some time.
Mm-hmm.
The group there has been suing to gain access to the actual ballots, right, and to the counting tallies from elections going back a few cycles?
Yeah, it's actually the database, the tabulator database, and it's sort of been a quiet story. We've covered it from time to time as it's progressed. I think it's a lot more important than people might see, and certainly than the coverage that it's gotten, because it's kind of a geeky story. They're trying to get the databases, the way that the Diebold voting machines down there actually recorded the votes, whether they be for the early voting, the absentee balloting, the election day balloting. going all the way back now to 1998, and actually in 2006, there's a questionable election that they had there. This is why they wanted to look at the databases. They're interested in seeing if, in fact, these databases themselves were messed with. And I'm going to be running the video, I think, over the weekend here at BradBlog, showing just how easy it is to go into the Diebold tabulator and change anything you want, anytime you want. And they have suspicions that, in fact, some of these databases were taken home at night prior to the election, numbers were changed, and then they were brought back in and merged into the live database. So they've been fighting this in court now for, boy, we're going on a year or two. And finally, they have had complete and utter success. And the judge has ordered that all of these databases of how people voted be given to these, it's actually the Pima County Democrats who sued to get at this information.
Mm-hmm.
That's big news, because up until now, Diebold and Pima County had argued that it was a security risk should they release these databases that, again, they tell nothing other than how people voted. And it doesn't name who they are or give their names or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how they voted. So they've said that that was a security risk. They couldn't release that data. Finally, the judge said that's utter nonsense. And now they have access to, as one of the election integrity folks down there, Jim March, says, the world's largest private collection of Diebold election data files anywhere. And they are seeking help in looking through that information. They want to build a tool to make it easier to look through, just a huge number of databases here to help find any fraud or anything that doesn't make sense. And in further elections now, they're going to get those databases right off the bat. So we're getting more transparency, thankfully, because of the folks in Pima County, and I hope that other folks around the country now will be able to get at some of that same information.
Brad, I'm looking at the item here, and I wonder if you could translate from the original geek. That's not Greek, but geek.
Geek, yes.
What does it mean to slash dot something? And don't answer yet.
Slash dot, dash dot, slash dot, dash dot, slash dot, dash dot, slash dot com.
All right.
Oh, that was good.
That's Fat Boy Slim.
Well, well done. Well, so he knows what slash dotting is, but you don't.
That's right. And I'm a fat boy, but I'm not Fat Boy Slim.
I guess you're not. Slash dot is slash dot, dot com. It's a geek website. I think they're their title is News for Nerds, and it's very, very widely read, and it used to be a joke. I guess it still is, but it used to be a joke that when they linked up to you, you were considered slash-dotted, and they had so much traffic that sometimes getting slash-dotted would mean it would take down your entire server accidentally.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to make sure that the call, the help-wanted ad, if you will, for a programmer to help look at some of this material, that it got before the eyeballs of as many geeks as possible. So that's why we've asked to let the folks at Slashdot know about it.
Well, we got a lot of geeks listening, including Geeks on Call, the guys who went over to the White House to destroy that hard drive for Scott Block.
Uh-huh.
So should they email you if they've got the skills and the time?
They should go check out BradBlog, look at this item, and there's an email address for Jim March, who has put together sort of a spec sheet for this program and what they hope it will do.
Mm-hmm.
They can get in touch with him. They can ask him questions, and there's some further information in comments from John Brakey, another one of the activists down there,
sure,
who you can also get in touch with. Don't ask me. My geek days are over.
Oh, you lucky guy.
Yeah.
Do you do Windows or just Vista?
I do Windows Vista, and I'm not happy about it. So.
Yeah, Vista sucks.
You said it, not me. Actually, I can say it. What do I care? They're not sponsoring me. You're right. Vista does suck.
Brad Friedman with us from BradBlog.com. Now, one more thing about Pima County, Arizona.
Yeah.
Why is it that that judge doesn't properly value the private property of Diebold? I mean, doesn't Diebold own all of the election materials in that county?
Well, they certainly argued that they did, and it was a pretty amazing case. I mean, because they the judge ended up forcing the county to explain exactly why it was that releasing this information would reveal some super secret information. And they couldn't. And, you know, the judge had released a couple of database files originally, The Democrats then had to show how there was, you know, nothing nefarious here at all. And eventually they did, and we got lucky in that we had a judge who actually went along with reason somehow and thought that the people who voted deserve to see how it is they vote. I guess that's a very rare judge these days.
Shouldn't survive appeal, would you think?
I think it will survive appeal.
Well, I hope you're right.
Yeah.
But I just don't know what kind of judges you get when you appeal in Arizona.
Well, that's right. But remember now, I believe they've already handed over these databases. So even if they appeal, I think it's too late. And they might have tried something, but I don't think they would have released that information unless they got the all clear. So it looks like they now finally have, and now it's just a matter of going through. Because remember, they've got databases. They've got multiple copies of every single database, because every time it's saved, it saves a backup copy. So what the trick will be for them, I think, is to look at one backup copy and then the subsequent copy and see if something has changed that shouldn't have in there. It's not going to be an easy task,
yeah.
But they're going to give it a go.
We're talking with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Lines are open if you have a question or a comment. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now let's go to Arkansas, where some very interesting analyses have occurred about the use of ESNS electronic voting machines.
Yeah, well, not just analyses, but actual elections were flipped. A week ago last Tuesday, they had local primary elections in Arkansas, and Arkansas uses voting machines made by ESNS pretty much across the state, and they have notoriously had problems with this ESNS outfit. Last Tuesday was no exception. All kinds of failures with the voting machines. I'm trying to actually figure out exactly what went wrong in Faulkner County. But in fact, a small election, they had a very low turnout because it was sort of, local state primary only. they had a problem on the touchscreen voting machines where a certain race had been removed from the ballot. So it shouldn't have been on there, and yet another race that was on the ballot got a whole bunch of votes from that race that was removed. It's very bizarre. It's very strange. The election director there has said it should have been impossible what happened, but I guess it wasn't, because all of these votes went into the wrong race, and it was only discovered because one of the candidates challenged the race, and they looked into it, and they found that, in fact, there were enough votes that it flipped the election. That also happened in a different county in Arkansas the week before, where, again, they had to recount every single race on the ballot. I think it was 9 different ones. Every total ended up being changed when they counted it by hand. In that case, they had paper ballots. In the first case I was talking about, it was on touchscreen. And they found that all of the totals changed. And, again, another election, the outcome was flipped. So when you hear about, we've never had problems with these elections, it hasn't, these e-voting machines, they haven't flipped any elections, that's absolutely nonsense. We see it now happening more and more, and the real question is, how many times does it happen, and we haven't seen it? And because it's very hard to tell unless you notice that something has, noticeably gone wrong.
Now, I understand, I haven't studied all this in detail, but from skimming your article, there's an issue here about voter verifiable paper trail. And one of the issues that you and I have discussed many times is that it's possible for a voter to select candidate A on the screen, for the paper trail to reflect candidate A on the little toilet paper roll that goes by, and a different candidate, number B, could be actually tallied in the memory card of that electronic voting machine. Is there any evidence that that sort of thing may have happened here?
That seems to be exactly what happened here, actually. The reporter, Joe Lamb, who I've been in touch with as he's been working on this story, and he tells me this afternoon he's going to be digging into this a lot more to figure out what happened. But he reports that, yeah, in fact, the so-called voter verifiable paper trail on those touchscreens gave the accurate the way that folks voted.
Mm-hmm.
So internally, it recorded one thing. On the paper trails, it recorded another. And this, again, goes back to what I've been trying to run around and let everyone know. When you're using these touchscreen machines that have these so-called paper trails, you're just asking for trouble. Because if you get into an election that is contested and you find that there are different numbers on the paper trails versus on the internal numbers, which happens quite frequently, we're going to have a fight about which numbers are the correct numbers.
Right.
And you thought what happened in 2000 was ugly. Boy, just wait until something like that happens in November of 2008, and you can bet your bottom dollar it will.
And, you know, ultimately, I don't think there's any way these machines can be saved, but it seems to me that at minimum, there has to be some verification that the paper trail is accurate by the voter before he or she leaves the booth in order to establish that that was the intent of the voter and not whatever was recorded on the memory card.
The problem is you can't do that because, as I believe I've talked about before, recent studies, one at Rice University, shows that even when people do check their paper trails, the summary at the end of the balloting on the computer,
right,
they don't notice when votes are flipped.
Mm-hmm.
So the Rice University study showed that 2/3 of voters who did check the summary at the end of voting didn't notice the vote had flipped. But even if they had noticed it, you've got a problem at the end of elections in relying on these things because there's no way to know whether the voter did or didn't check those paper trails. That's why you need a ballot that is marked by the voter, by the voter's own hand, and you can then know it for sure. As far as testing goes, you hear people talk about all the time that, oh, the machines were tested beforehand, everything was fine. Well, these machines were tested beforehand. Everything was fine in the pre-election tests. Everything was even fine during the early voting.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, whatever happened here didn't happen until election day itself. And that's very troubling. I'll toss in, I know you got to get to a break, I'll toss in one other point. Up in Washington, they were doing testing for a new Sequoia voting system. They did their pre-election tests. It showed 0 votes in the electronic ballot box. And then when they counted it at the end, they found there was actually 57 votes from a previous test election that were still in the box that were not caught in the pre-election test. That's scary.
Ow! We're going to continue in just a moment and take some phone calls here with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number, and this is the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Checking traffic on KRXA. Still have a major problem in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Highway 17 at the summit, all lanes were shut down as they removed a truck that went down the embankment. Northbound lane's open and backed up about a mile. Southbound right lane is still closed, and you're backed up to about Lark Avenue in Los Gatos. A couple of other problems coming in for the Monterey area as well. Cornwall Street at Paul Avenue in Salinas, crash on the shoulder. Blanco Road at Davis Road in Salinas, an accident with a couple of cars, and that's blocking the intersection. CHP's on the scene. South 101 at the Big Red Barn, or near San Juan Road, a crash. Couple of cars. Looks like that may have been moved out of the way, but look for heavy traffic there. This is brought to you by Promaris. Don't let fleas and ticks get too comfortable in your home. Ask your veterinarian if it's time for something new. Promaris. Fleas and ticks have never seen anything like this. Have a great weekend. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm John.
And I'm John.
And we're from All Class Transportation, where we take you to your special event in style, comfort, and safety. All Class Transportation is a truly professional local luxury transportation company with over 25 years of combined managerial service, an efficient, proactive staff, trained, certified chauffeurs, and a fleet of well-maintained luxury vehicles. We are well-suited to meet and exceed your specific needs.
All Class Transportation specializes in personalized luxury transportation, including company parties, corporate events, weddings, quinceañeras. Whatever your needs, call All Class Transportation at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338. Want to know about our rates? At All Class Transportation, our service and rates are second to none, period. We are All Class Transportation, TCP 22978A. Call us at 831-582-9338. That's 582-9338.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on at 7 minutes in front of the hour. Bruce, sing it. We continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, and Molly in Monterey is listening to KRXA. Welcome, Molly.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and thanks for everything you two fellas do. And you may have, one anecdotal thing was a fellow I was just talking to said that when he voted, did his voter registration at the DMV, he put down Democratic Party, and it came back declined to state. So it's somehow changed. And then the other thing that I understand is the petitions, and you folks may have covered this in all of your discussions, but the small print in some of those petitions that folks are gathering signatures in front of markets and things,
right,
that sometimes in the small print you've changed your party affiliation by signing them, or you set up a vote by mail.
Interesting. Brad, have you seen that?
No, I haven't. I am not aware of that. The other issue of party registration being changed, you know, brings up a very good point. People need to call their county registrar or call the Secretary of State, even if you voted in the recent primary or the one coming up on Tuesday. Make sure you are registered as you think you are, because a lot of people show up to vote and they find they have somehow fallen off the registration list. So check your registration, please.
And this is a party primary, and so there could be problems if, for example, you thought you were a declined to state voter, but you're a member of the independent party.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be able to vote in a Democratic primary. If you are a declined to state voter, you'll be given the option of a Democratic or a Republican ballot. I'm correct, yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Molly, anything else?
Thanks a lot for what you're doing.
Hey, Molly.
Bye.
Okay, thanks for your call today. I was going to give her a DVD, but she didn't stay online.
Oh!
So, Brad, last week you and I talked, and we also talked with reporter Wayne Slater from the Dallas Morning News about the phony epidemic of voter fraud cases in Texas. And when it all the smoke cleared, there are six or eight actual cases of people who intentionally violated the law. The rest of them are technical violations. Now the attorney general in Texas has said, okay, no more of the technical violations. We'll try to inform seniors how to handle their absentee ballot, that kind of thing. But now we have Fox News stepping into the mix, and they've opened up a special email for tipsters who want to turn in of Vote Fraudster?
Yeah, and let me give that email address right off the bat, just to make sure I get it out. VoterFraud@FoxNews.com. They are picking up where the Republican Party and the Bush DOJ has had no success whatsoever. They're scaring people that there is voter fraud going on out there, which, as you say, by and large, there isn't. But there is one case that Fox News could report on, and that would be the case of Ann Coulter, who committed voter fraud beyond any question of a doubt down in Palm Beach County. Brad Blog has long been on the story. We have got all the documents to prove it. So if folks want to help out Fox News, because they're asking for help, let them know at voterfraud@foxnews.com. Drop them a note. Tell them to please, please report on the Ann Coulter voter fraud, and let them know that Brad Friedman at Brad Blog would be happy to give them any supporting documentation they may need.
All right. Here
well,
is
always the... trying to help, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've addressed it. I've got the email going here, voterfraud@foxnews.com. Subject, here's one.
There you go. And if you want to really be helpful, bradblog.com/coulterfraud. Get
Brad.
You to the entire body of Brad Blog reporting on Ann Coulter's voter fraud.
Okay.
Felony voter fraud.
Bradblog.com/
Coulter fraud.
Coulter fraud.
Yes, sir.
Better than a poltergeist.
That's right.
Okay, well, I'm going to dispatch that immediately, and we'll see what kind of an automated response I get.
Yeah, now, I ran that story a day or two ago, and I don't know why, but I've yet to hear from Fox News for some reason.
Well, I hope they'll be calling very soon, and I'd love to see them put you on with that excellent, independent, fair and balanced commentator, Karl Rove, and you could serve him with an extra subpoena, Brad.
I would love to be there.
Happy trails to you.
Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill, Brian Urban on duty today. Podcasts at peterbcollins.com.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
The judge left the court in a total disarray.
Polygamist Elder Willie Jessup, after a court hearing in San Angelo, Texas, where an agreement to return children to their parents at Yearning for Zion Ranch was supposed to be finalized. But, as CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan reports, the judge refused to sign it.
Literally, this afternoon, we were talking about the details that parents would have to give a photograph when they picked up the children. They'd have to offer up an address of where they lived, that children wouldn't be able to travel more than 60 miles without having permission. All of these details, the fundamentals of this agreement, seemed to be agreed upon. But late in the day, there were more and more objections, and I think, as far as the judge was concerned, deal's off the table.
The judge says she will sign the deal once all of the parents agree to its terms. It's another night of wind, hail, and rain in the Midwest. North-central Indiana has been battered by gusts of 70 to 80 miles an hour, and at least one tornado was reported. In Springfield, Illinois, warning sirens sent legislators to shelter in the basement of the state capitol. They got the all clear 45 minutes later. Elsewhere in the state, utilities say tens of thousands of customers lost power. The roof was blown off of a building at the Rockford Airport. Florida and Michigan defied the Democratic Party by moving up their primaries. Tomorrow, the Rules Committee decides whether to punish those states by barring their delegates from the convention. That's unlikely. CBS News senior political correspondent Jeff Greenfield says some kind of compromise is.
The best guess is that with Florida, where both candidates were on the ballot, they will seat the delegation as voted, but strip them of half their voting power. That'll give Hillary Clinton about 20 more votes at the convention. Michigan, where Obama wasn't on the ballot, there's talk that they'll split that evenly. That's not going to make the Clinton people happy, and it's not going to make some Michigan Democrats happy.
People with asthma will have to get used to new inhalers that don't use chlorofluorocarbons, a propellant that destroys the ozone in the Earth's atmosphere.
The FDA is giving what amounts to one final warning. Inhalers powered with CFCs will be gone by year's end. Nancy Sander, founder of a group that represents mothers of asthmatics, says millions are resisting this change mandated by Congress, largely because the newer inhalers are higher-priced brand-name medications, not generics.
We're asking Congress to authorize funding to increase awareness and education, and also to provide financial assistance.
Barry Back.